Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Episode 9. We apologize in advance with Morgan and Ben. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Discourse again. How are you, Morgan?
I'm great, and you just completely blew my intro that I wrote.
Yeah, because you always do it. So I thought I'd do it. Go on.
Your ones always sound apologetic. You're listening to the Discourse Weekly Show. That wasn't what my intro was going to be. So how are you, Television's Ben Gracewood?
I'm excellent. How are you, Television's Morgan Nicol?
I'm ace. So our takeover of Media 7 last week, I think, was pretty comprehensive.
I think it was well done.
But they didn't print the URL for the podcast anywhere. Motherfuckers.
We came through with doubling their audience as agreed, and they didn't return the favour.
Turnabout. This is a circle jerk, motherfuckers, not a blowjob. Did I just go a little bit?
No. Go. You got. Sorry, I was actually physically clearing.
That's something I want to... Okay. Speaking of you clearing your throat, two things I want to get out of the way before we start the podcast proper. Number one, the drinking game is this. Every time Ben sounds like he doesn't give a shit, you have to drink. Every time he yawns into the microphone, you have to take a drink. Every time he says interesting or funny or... No, excellent's all right.
Yeah.
No. Okay, maybe saying interesting's all right, but every time he says funny instead of laughing, you drink. See, because laughter, that's how you express that you think something's funny. You don't say, oh, funny. Now, I think, was that on Friends? Like someone was dating a girl,
fun Bobby,
and instead of laughing, she said funny, and that's why he broke up. No, it was Seinfeld. I'm sure it was Seinfeld. It sounds like a Seinfeld.
Okay.
All right, that's that, out of the way.
Good.
Number two thing. I've had some negative feedback on Twitter about my overuse of bleeps. I would say that there's definitely two kinds of bleeps. There's the bleeps which are protecting us from legal action. And then there's the bleeps, which are just on, you know, swearing. What I really want to do is get into a dialogue with our listeners about whether they want the latter kind of bleeps. I'm always going to bleep names of people and stuff that we talk about realize that it's suppressed.
Yeah.
We have to bleep those.
Yep.
There really is no choice. But with swearing, we absolutely have a choice. This podcast is marked explicit at the beginning of every show. We have a notice that says this contains adult language.
Our only audio feedback ever was a guy saying we were swearing too much. So maybe if people think we're not swearing enough and we're bleeping it too much, maybe we need some audio feedback on that.
Maybe we do need some audio feedback on that.
Some feedback,
or maybe the fact that we've now had people saying, don't bleep yourself, I want to hear what you say. And we've also had feedback from people saying, don't swear so much. Maybe that means which we're actually treading that fine line right in the middle.
And the thing is, you don't bleep all the fucks and c**ts and assholes.
So far I've bleeped every c**.
Okay.
It is my goal in life to bleep every c**. I want to bleep every like I want to every pair of tits.
Okay.
I need to talk to someone who hasn't been long term married.
I do see a lot of tits though.
You do see a lot of tits?
A few tits.
Where do you generally see tits the most? I mean, let's say outside the bedroom. Yeah. Because you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't want to say. Oh, God damn it, Alex. Am I allowed to say Alex? Alex's name.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. That's good.
Because some people are all like our friends when they talk about their kids.
Yeah.
They're like only their initial capital of their name.
Really?
Yeah. Have you noticed? I guess to protect them from Googling or something.
That's where I do draw a line there in social media and online and stuff. It's Mr. Six and Mrs. One, and I'm not going to go too far. Every now and then I'll mention the names, but I'm not going to out them.
You want to know the funniest example of that?
Yeah.
Louise does that, so she'll say M. And then if she links to her blog, it's it's mumandmia.com. Which is funny. It's a great site. I really like my mummy friends' blogs. I really enjoy them. My favourite but least updated is Eskimo and Sparrow, which is Catherine's one.
Oh, okay. Good. She did it.
She's a great writer. She's really good. Mm. And I really love seeing Louise's one. But this is all very inside baseball. These are like, you know, my personal friends. And, you know, if you know them as well, then you'll find this interesting. But given that our audience is now made up of people all over the world.
Yeah. I don't know how deep to go on the tits episode, because I think there's stuff I could say which would embarrass Alex a lot. So I won't say that.
You tease. So now, presumably, you wanted to talk about nzgirl.net.nz?
.co, I
think. NZGirl.co.nz. You want to talk about that? This is their breast cancer thing?
Yeah, well, I guess we should. I mean, it's huge news. I know T personally quite well because, you know, she used to do the breakfast show.
I don't know who she is.
T Twyford, editor of NZGirl.com.
T Twyford?
Yes. T.
Her Twyford. Name's T.
T-double-E, yes. I presume it's short for something.
Tina.
Never thought to ask her.
Christine. I bet that's what it's short for.
It's spelled T-double-E on her business card and everything like that. Yeah, maybe it's...
Does she have golfer?
She still does the gadgets on The Breakfast Show.
Oh.
TVNZ Breakfast. So,
does she possess a pair of breasts?
Yes.
Yep.
So perhaps I'm a little biased in that I know her... Knowing her personally,
Ben.
She's a reasonably... You know, she's just a person. She doesn't...
Just a person.
But she's also a person that runs a website.
Yep. With a shitty domain name.
It's a very popular website, quite well patronised.
I would like to patronise it.
So I can understand the angle that people come from saying it's just for the links.
So tell me what happened.
What happened was they said post...
This story is in my show notes.
Sorry. Well, no, you go.
You started it, so you can own it.
What it made, actually, since we're talking about titacular subject matter, we should get someone on who has a pair of tits as well.
All right, let's find someone. Hey, Robin, are you there?
It's such a classy intro. Hi, the tits have arrived.
Senior culture commentator and Wellington correspondent, Robin Gallagher.
And how?
So now I'll speak with authority about
nice
it.
Man boobs.
Thank you. My man boobs, actually. More about that later.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'll speak with authority now that Robin's listening. Just you know, she can you can pipe in at any point and correct me if I'm wrong. Breast cancer awareness, NZ Girl said that for every pair of tits that were shown on the website, which I think was poorly, the parameters were poorly set out because I think some people very eagerly went on with bare tits and others just posted a picture of their top, which I think was kind of copping out. They said they would fund, $50 for every pair of tits.
Yep, and it's called I've Got a Nice Pair. And they talk about our favourite breasts today. Judgments, ladies. This is a safe place. But we're going to rate your tits.
There was wide outrage because of the fact that there was rating on it. And the claim that the editors and proprietors of the website made was that, no, that's just every photo we put up automatically gets tweet this, rate this on it.
If I can rate them.
You think they would have?
I was a little bit excited. I went through the photos here, and not to be not to treat objects like women at all. It's not really very fat worthy, to be honest. It's not the point, but they're putting tits on the internet, Ben, and the point isn't my sexual gratification. apparently not, because I wasn't sexually gratified. I had to immediately go to the hunt.
Everyone throws out the analogy there that if it was prostate cancer, they just post pictures of assholes.
No, they wouldn't.
Now, even if they did...
Prostate isn't an asshole.
I'd probably... Well, it's in
there. Most accessible through an asshole.
Maybe what's the area? I can't remember the area. Just below your scrotum. Between your scrotum and asshole. Can't remember the name of the place.
Perineum.
It's the taint.
That's the one, perineum.
The perineum.
It's the taint.
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I just play one on a podcast.
But if I were to post up a picture of my prostatular area, I'd be fine with that for $50. But if somebody found out someone was wanking over it, I'd feel a little bit dirty.
Oh, I've just discovered there's been some new tits added, and I might have to revise my judgment. Oh, dear God.
See, this it's an interesting situation because, some of the criticism I've seen is people saying, NZ Girl is aimed towards teenage girls, and they could be encouraged to put their breasts online, and then people will misappropriate them and do dirty, disgusting things with them. Oh, my God, you shouldn't do that. But on the other hand, there are some women out there who are quite happy to put photos of their tits online, and they're probably the ones... Well, they may be the ones who are doing the bare-breasted photos, and they're quite happy for people to look at them and to get sexual gratification from them. And it gets a bit kind of creepy and moralistic with people saying, no, you shouldn't do that. That's disgusting.
And on the third hand, Robin, if anyone actually looks at these tits, you will see they're definitely not from 10 girls.
Well, yes. I haven't looked, actually. I've just read.
I have specific requirements when it comes to breasts, particularly with nipples. Everyone is into different things.
Do you like breasts with cancer?
No, not at all. And I was actually really pleased to see one, at least one, which clearly was post-surgery. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I was really pleased to see it up there.
Other issue is there's this whole thing about the sexualization of breast cancer. You know, you get to have all, ladies in tight T-shirts going... support breast cancer research.
The other fact is that the funding for breast cancer is far outweighs the prevalence of breast cancer, especially compared to prostate cancer.
As far as I know, I'm the only person on the podcast who's ever actually had a cancer scare, and it was breast cancer, and it was a huge fucking pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Tits.
I had a testicle lump. It turned out to be nothing. Did you? But it freaked me right out for a long time. There's those periods of time when your brain just goes in loops when you know something's not right.
That. Yeah, I had that. Yeah. And even after I'd been to the doctor, I still had that. So I went and got some imaging done.
Right.
And even after that, I kind of still had that.
Yeah.
But they said there was nothing there. Well, I mean, they said there was something there, but it wasn't cancer. And I was like, okay, can you please explain all this pain I'm having in my boob? I'd really like that pain to go away. And they're just like, have some antibiotics. Fucking what, doctor? I'm a fake doctor, and even I can do better than that asshole.
So, I mean,
You don't think about men getting breast cancer, but they do.
Yep.
And yet all the breast cancer sort of promotion out there is all aimed towards women. You know, they are the main people who get it. But, you know, that's the non-sexy side of it that you don't really think about.
Yeah. Well, like you say, the sexualization side of it is because, I guess, both men and women like breasts to be healthy.
Yep.
And so, therefore, there's, you know, the entire world backing it up.
Another sexualization side of it is that the women's health lobby is much more powerful than the men's health lobby. More men die of prostate cancer than women die of breast cancer.
Correct.
And for a long time, the women's health lobby said either, well, get your shit together and you know, do your own campaigns, or keep your fucking ears out, men die with it, not of it. But it's absolutely false. Men die of prostate cancer in large numbers.
Is now the Blue September campaign to raise awareness for prostate cancer.
That was because the Movember guys split up with the prostate guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a falling out over that.
Ah, fuck Movember. If you want to grow a moustache, you don't need anyone else to give you permission. Just grow it, you useless fucking lawyer bitch. You fucking accountant, grow a moustache. No one in the office cares if you have some stubble. Have some stubble for a couple of weeks and then then shave the bits you don't want to keep.
Coming back to this NZ Girl breast campaign.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I think anything that raises $50 for breast cancer is a cool thing, right? But on the other hand, couldn't they have thought of a better way to get people to do something? Sing a song. For everyone who sing a song, will raise $50.
Do a striptease.
But neither of those. Your one, would have got lots of links, but sing a song wouldn't have got lots of links.
Sing a song would have got jack and shit.
Mm.
Sing a song naked.
I mean, I think it was a good idea. I think their hearts were in the right place, but they just hadn't really thought it through.
If you're going to laugh, you've got to laugh into the microphone, Ben.
Oh, dearie me.
Yeah, I hopefully the audience didn't hear what I just said because Robin talked over my punchline, but I mean, we can cross our fingers. Now, just as an aside, Ben, you may have just heard drinking something.
Oh, yeah. I saw this beer in the cooler as I was coming over because for the last four podcasts I've basically sculled all of Morgan's beer and brought nothing along, so I thought I'd better bring some beer.
My good beer, my moderately good beer.
Going past, I live out west, which is just shit for beer because there's the trusts who, it's a dry area and all the licenses have to be licensed to the trusts and they all buy the same beer and it's all shit. The best you can get is basically
Lion Red,
Monteith's.
Right.
Monty's kind of crafty stuff.
Yeah.
So I saw this thing called Ranfurly Pale Ale. I thought, that's the first time I've seen a pale ale anywhere near this off license.
Mm.
Picked it up, brought it over. What
number
are you,
one.
I'm not a beer connoisseur, but I know what I like, and this is shit. Right. But Morgan, you're a beer connoisseur. What do you make of it?
Let me tell you, the first thing to note, when you open it, on the nose, there's nothing.
Yeah.
there's nothing. On the dominant mouthfeel is water. Mm. The dominant flavour is carbonation.
I've got a SodaStream.
There are no hops.
I've got a SodaStream at home.
There's no significant malt.
Fizz up water.
There's no aroma of yeast. It is the worst beer that I've had in a long time.
Yeah. It feels like if I'd poured a quarter inch of pale ale, epic pale ale, and then filled the rest up with SodaStream water, it would taste about the same.
That's probably right. Mm. It actually, because the carbonation has that distinctly artificial flavour.
Yeah.
Yeah, it tastes almost exactly like that, except probably... if you did it with Epic, it would taste better than this, even if it was only a one quarter measure.
And the cool thing is on the back of it, it says, you can read the first bit, Morgan, if you want.
Ranfurly Station Pale Ale is brewed in the spirit of the early Otago pioneers.
With heavy carbonation. How do they think they did that in the early pioneers?
I don't know. Generally, the early pioneers probably didn't have much carbonation, but yeast provides carbonation.
My favourite thing is www.ranfurly.co.nz. Type that into your browser as of now.
Yeah.
There's nothing there.
There's no DNS entry. Nothing there at all. And if you get Google to tell you about Ranfurly.co.nz, it doesn't even have a cached copy. There's fucking nothing.
It sounds like a movie prop.
It is a movie prop.
You could be right. It's like brown fizzy water.
The spirit of the early Otago pioneers, brewed in Auckland.
So yeah, we need
this shit is shit.
We need a beer sponsor to save us from Ranfurly.
We desperately need a beer sponsor.
Shocking. Hey, Robin, we had a mission for you.
The mission was to go to Te Papa and to check out the European Masters exhibition, which I did.
I'm sorry, while you were talking, I made the mistake of visiting a link that Ben just IM'd me. Well, we'll have to come back to it.
I'm glad you laughed. It's good.
I don't, yeah. Te Papa. Let's not go there. Can I talk about my adventure?
Yes. Sorry, Robin.
That ran fully. So I went to the European Masters exhibition, and you know, there's a nice big collection of paintings from the 19th and 20th century. And when I was 12, I played a lot of Where in Time as Carmen Sandiego, so I was familiar with some of the artists involved.
Right.
Edgar Degas, you know, Paul Klee and them. But what I really want to talk about is the gift shop.
was it that uninspiring, the exhibition?
Well, the exhibition was good, but the gift shop was something quite, yeah, I hadn't quite experienced a gift shop quite like this. It's one of those exit through the gift shop situations.
Did they have plastic tickies made in China?
No. What they had a whole lot of stuff branded with the European Masters branding.
Yeah.
Hand cream and the stuff called a soap and body silk. I don't know what that is.
Body silk. Sounds like some kind of lube.
Well, yeah, it's just Masters these kind lube. Of tubs. I mean, I don't think there's anything use with special your about them.
Did you just call me Tubbs?
You know, it's my special name for Ben.
Oh, it's Ben. Okay.
You know, I like you to shake it for me, Tubbs.
Tubbs, sandwich eater. He's got a big soft for sandwiches. And mayo.
This is a very voluptuous episode.
Yes. Well, that's what I was saying. Is your body silk is for your voluptuous lady, isn't it? Cause that's
so rubbing the body silk, your Te Papa European Masters body silk.
Alabaster,
all over.
On your alabaster lady.
And, you know, I would thought maybe if they skin. Had. If they got some cosmetician to make this stuff inspired by the exhibition. But I don't think it is. I think they've literally just got a supplier of this and then stuck on a sticker.
There's catalogs you can go to for special, you know, for it's what do they call it? Branded supplies.
Lanolin or aloe vera.
And you choose your thing, you choose your pen and your soap and, you know, your frisbee, and you just get it branded, and that's probably what they've done.
Yeah, and there are other things. It seems to be the more artistic side of this, because there are also coloured pencils and sketching pencils, just with a little piece of paper in the packet that says European Masters.
I bet they're really shit pencils.
And this is our national art gallery.
Yeah, it's like go to an art supply shop and buy them.
Oh, did you try that pen that I recommended last time, Robin?
I didn't try it, actually.
Uniball Vision Elite. Remember the name. It'll change your life.
With the ball that falls out.
With the ball that did fall out previously. I got two to replace that one. And they've got the most beautiful dark blue. Usually I use a black ink, but this dark blue changed my life.
So how much did it cost? So will you say that the 20, what is it, $22 to go to the European Masters?
$22.50.
You can claim $22.50 for an adult ticket, by the way.
File an expense claim with the accounting department.
Yeah, with the Discourse accounting department.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, send an email to Cheryl. Cheryl at Discourse. And if your email bounces, just ignore that. I'm sure it went through. She'll be back to you in no time.
So was the gift shop travel worth the entry price?
Well, the funny thing is that all that gift shop stuff is available in the normal Te Papa gift shop as well.
But it wouldn't have that piece of paper saying European Masters.
It does. You know, they have exactly the same stock, but their special little European Masters corner. But it doesn't catch you because you don't have to. If you don't go to the exhibition, then there's nothing that will make you go into the Te Papa gift shop.
What is the point? Who buys that shit?
Well, I don't know.
They have to throw it out afterwards, aren't they? Or does it go? Does it come with? Does the exhibition travel around the world?
I think it is a traveling one. Yeah.
So maybe it comes with the exhibition.
But a lot of it actually seems a bit local because some of the stuff they have, I mean, they have things like postcards, which is pretty standard, but also like fridge magnets and badges, or they have basically just cropped these paintings into an arbitrary circle shape. And on the card it said something like sales from this directly help Te Papa. So
I'm right. This is,
you know what helps Te Papa? Huge fucking funding. Fucking Te Papa. Yes. And how good are they? Where do they get off showing art at Te Papa? I thought it was supposed to be a fucking museum, you know, championing our heritage. And what? So they're showing European masters?
I think it's also a national art gallery.
Yeah, no way. It's a shit museum. Be a worse gallery. I mean, it's a museum for children. What's this gallery you talk about?
Well, that's another interesting thing that's been in the news lately.
Oh, is it? I have no idea.
Shut up. There's a segue.
Just leave the segue alone. You like flogging the shit out of it.
I have to.
Yes, the segue, Robin. Yep. Sorry.
Okay, so in the press lately has been the notion of Te Papa, which is supposed to be the National Museum and the National Gallery.
Because there was a National Gallery prior to Te Papa, and it's been subsumed.
Is that the one that they moved, like on rails? Was that the National Gallery, the old National Gallery?
No, that was a hotel.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
That was a hotel?
That's a museum hotel. They shifted it.
Why?
They both used to live in the old building, which is at the top of Tory Street, where the Massey University now lives there. And just before Te Papa came into existence, they merged the museum and gallery. But prior to that, they had been run in the same building, but they were run separately.
Oh, okay.
And I think the whole idea with Te Papa is they would sort of, there would be a kind of a meshing of the museum and gallery function. You know, what is a museum and what is a gallery? Let's all bring it together.
Would it be the same inept assholes who put Te Papa together that would put this new National Gallery together?
I didn't hear that.
I think you're jumping ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're jumping ahead of the conversation.
One thing that can be said for this shitty beer is that it contains alcohol and apparently chronotons. And if you remember chronotons from Star Trek,
they move you ahead in time.
Apparently.
So what Morgan was actually saying was that so what's happened is the Te Papa director, is it, has come out and said, because we're so shit at displaying art,
because they're so shit at fucking everything,
then we should spend another $100 million on a national art gallery, a standalone national art gallery, and it should be in Wellington.
Yes.
What? Are you fucking kidding me?
See, I remember when Te Papa was first
more arts funding for Wellington.
Yeah.
Because they don't already have enough.
No, not at all. When Te Papa was first proposed, $300 million, I remember at the time thinking, imagine what Auckland Museum would look like with $100 million spent on it.
Yeah.
It would just fucking
rock. It would
rock.
Be amazing. It would and be it's incredible. Already amazing.
It's already, yeah, it's an amazing
Auckland
building.
Auckland War Memorial
location.
Museum already pisses and shits on the face of Te Papa. and it's an old building.
Incredible location, everything.
Well, and Hamish Keith has a really interesting idea. I mean, he has basically said Te Papa doesn't deserve a gallery because they can't do
Voice of reason.
They can't do justice to it. They're useless. They've never got it right. They're never going to get it right. So just don't give them any money because they're shit.
Yeah.
And what he thinks they should do is instead to sort of tour the national art collection. You know, have it. There are so many good regional art galleries. You know, let the regional galleries use their art and display
regional galleries.
Direct shows.
You say regional.
$100 million, you could buy.
Shouldn't we just put
awesome
this in population centres? Well, where does Wellington come in the list of population centres? Is it third?
Fourth now,
I think. Fourth now? Fucking Wellington. It doesn't matter that it's in the middle. It's not where the people are.
Capital.
Fuck the capital. That's not enough.
No, but $100 million, you buy an awesome temperature humidity controlled truck and just drive the art around.
New York City is not the capital of the United States.
I'm blinded by your logic, Morgan.
You don't like my logic?
No.
You know, there are some really good art galleries around. Christchurch has a really good one.
Oh, I love Christchurch. Your boyfriend Christchurch has a wonderful gallery.
You know,
Auckland will have a good one in a few months.
In a few months, that's going to be really kick-ass.
Did they number the bricks when they took
it down? I've been to a lot of art galleries in Australia too, and I'd love to see something like that for New Zealand art for the national collection. So whether it's at Te Papa or somewhere else.
I was just at the National Museum of Modern Art in Tokyo, and it was, I can't even remember how much it cost to get in. 100 or 400 yen, which is either $1.60 or like $6 or something.
It's Deadly Squat, whatever it is.
The Deadly Squat, and god damn, it was just such a beautiful collection. Yeah. I wouldn't say it felt like a large collection, but man, it was just amazing stuff. Did I talk about this last week? I was kind of zoning out all the way through.
No, you skipped over a lot of Tokyo, Japan actually.
We can dribble it in over the next forever. some of the most amazing stuff from.
Do they have the wave painting?
It was kind of up to. No.
Not their famous painting of the. That's all I think of when I think of Japanese art.
Yeah, it's not modern art though, is it, Ben?
Oh, it was modern. Yes, you're right. No.
So this was between about 1908 and this year. Really, the most amazing stuff. I still haven't written up everything from my journal, so I can't remember names or artists or even years really. But the most amazing stuff I think was from about the 1920s. It was painting that just is completely outside of my experience of painting. It didn't even look like it was painted. It looked like it felt more like the glaze that you see on some amazing pottery. But so you couldn't see brush strokes and you couldn't see how the pigment was working.
What was the building like and the way they arranged it and stuff? I mean, how did it compare to other galleries you'd been to? Was it just halls of walls?
Pretty much. Yeah, it was the white wall. It's not hard. It's easy. And it was five floors of that, and it was free access into a couple of special exhibitions. And let me tell you this one other thing. I got photo accreditation. So I could walk around taking photos.
Oh, nice.
Do you know how hard it was to get photo accreditation? I went up to the counter and said, can I take photos? They gave me the rules and they gave me a special sticker.
Nice.
And then outside of a couple of special areas, I was allowed to take photos of the exhibits.
That's good.
I like galleries that do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that I thought, everything else about Christchurch Museum is completely rubbish. But on the way in, they said, feel free to take photos.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience at the Queensland Gallery I went to recently. Pretty much everywhere you could go, apart from one specific exhibition and an Aboriginal art area, you could take photos. It was really good.
So, I mean, to me, like I say, I know it sounds stupid, but galleries are halls and walls, and like the Auckland Gallery, even before it was put together, it's that that feeling of space and standing, be able to stand back and move around. And then when I go to Te Papa, it's like, it is a museum and they've stuck some extra partitions in there to hang art on.
Yeah.
It is bullshit. I mean, how do they get it so wrong?
I think they had this idea that, you know, I mean, there is this notorious example of, I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, of when they first opened, they had Colin McCann's Northland panels next to a fridge because they were both made in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And that, I think that was the idea. It was kind of this naive idea that, you know, you can literally blend the museum and gallery elements together and it will be really kind of new and awesome without realizing that sometimes it's nice to have space around things and quietness.
Oh, quietness is, I think, quite important. Mm. Also, somewhere to sit.
Yes. Yeah, and the ability to step back.
And that was another thing. No, I didn't partake of this, but there were attendants everywhere, and I was told off by one for taking a photo in an area which I wasn't aware I wasn't allowed to. But under the attendants' chairs was notebooks and pencils and colouring pencils for people who wanted to walk around and like sketch things out, and maybe if you're inspired by something.
Well, this is interesting because at the European Masters exhibition, you had to turn your cell phones off. You weren't even allowed to use your cell phone.
Why?
Like, you couldn't ring up someone and go, oh my god, this is so awesome, and you weren't allowed to sketch.
What?
Which I thought was a bit.
Because you're going to steal the soul of a painting, of a painting, which there must probably be tens of thousands of duplications on the internet.
They'll sell you
some shitty pencils in the gift shop, but you can't actually use them inside the gallery.
Was that a rule? Was there a rule for that?
That was the rule for the European Masters exhibition.
Oh, God.
Can I just say one thing? Dear Mike, who commented on, episode 6, are you happy now, that we've talked about galleries and had something to say? Please comment again, and this time don't be so, don't snipe so much.
What was his comment?
Thanks a lot, asshole.
He said talk more about galleries.
Good show, but 50% of your demographic, i.e. me, did not like the boring stuff about Te Papa.
Suck it.
Hey, I met your
hater. Thanks a lot for listening, Mike.
I met your hater on the weekend.
My hater? Oh, that's exciting.
I actually met him.
Oh, that's good. Is he a hater in real life? I have a feeling that he's probably not a hater.
He's a good guy. He's a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
He's brusque.
Well, I'm in favour of that.
Yeah. So. Maybe we should bleep that out, actually. I don't know if that's very, very forward of me, but he comes across as not brusque.
You didn't say sexy. You didn't say...
Abrupt sounds wrong as well. It's more direct. Direct is the term I'm looking for.
Oh, I'm direct.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe that's why he hates you.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's because he's an arsehole. Maybe he's got really, he's just got really bad taste in people. Oh, probably. I'm kidding. What's his name?
I don't know. We never mentioned his name before, have we?
Oh.
That guy. And kind of apt that it's the tits episode.
Sorry.
Wait. Oh, you could have read my gestures there in several different ways. That could have been...
Sorry, Robin. I'm just...
This is great internet radio. I tell you what.
Yeah.
We should video this thing.
I'm trying to work out how to fit in the next story.
If we were videoing this, I'd probably have to be wearing pants.
Big news of the week. What's
the big news of the week?
Well, you can't really get past the gigantic...
Oh, I have no idea what you're talking about.
WikiLeaks, which is such a bad name. Why do they call it WikiLeaks in the first place?
Is any part of it actually a wiki?
Wiki is meant
it's
to be...
It's not a wiki.
No, it's not a wiki. I guess wiki in the term of collaboration. You help us, we'll help you.
So what happened was what is called Cablegate, and what they called Cablegate themselves, because it was cablegate.wikileaks.org,
yes,
which no longer works because the domain name's been
wikileaks.ch
withdrawn and the hosting's been killed, and then the replacement hosting was killed. Now, this is an unbelievably huge story, which I think is going to have long, far-reaching consequences, and I think that we haven't heard anything like the end of this. Mm. Let me just read a quick post that kind of summarizes the whole thing. So this is from a site which I've never visited before, but that was shared on Google Reader by someone that I follow. It's somebits.com. The title is WikiLeaks Hysteria. I've been following the WikiLeaks story with some interest. The hysteria surrounding the cable leaks is downright un-American. The most disturbing thing is what looks to be a coordinated campaign to deny WikiLeaks access to American internet companies. Amazon dropped them. PayPal dropped them, EveryDNS dropped them, Tableau dropped them. All of these companies have the right to choose whom they do business with. But freedom of the press requires a press. It's particularly troubling to think that government pressure is behind the shutdowns. Also disturbing is Interpol chasing Assange over a minor Swedish criminal charge. I don't want to dismiss the rights of the accusers in Sweden, but the timing and publicity make it obvious the international warrant has more to do with revenge than sexual impropriety. Now, the story is WikiLeaks equals rapist, a smear which discredits the cable releases without addressing their content. And then you get the crazy shit, a sustained DDoS attack against the WikiLeaks site, which does nothing to stop the cable release, but does make it harder for the organisation to explain what they're doing, and a herd of nutjobs saying that Assange should be assassinated. The air is poisoned. What makes the response seem like hysteria is the actual cable leak doesn't seem that big a deal. WikiLeaks is being responsible about redaction. The source material, while private, was hardly ever kept that secure. The cables were stored globally on SIPRnet, where thousands to millions of people had access. Anything shared with thousands of people is not, practically speaking, secret. And the information coming out so far has proven to hardly be blockbuster. It has been interesting, though, and embarrassing. Clearly, the cable leak is against the US government's interests, and of course the government is going to respond. But the response is looking a little crazy and disproportionate, not to mention ineffective. In the meantime, news organizations every day are turning the material into fascinating stories about the inner workings of US relations with North Korea, China, Italy, Russia, Afghanistan. In the end, the disclosure may well create more value than harm caused, which I think is quite a good summary. Mm-hmm. But one thing I would say, the thing about, they call it sexual impropriety here, that is, we don't actually know the real truth there with how serious that is.
You've heard the detail on the Swedish law and that sort of stuff is all very weird, isn't it?
It's very weird. Oh, let me quote from threat level. This thing, the story is complicated, and I don't really want to get it wrong by being my normal half-assed self. Stevens told AOL News on Thursday that the offence under investigation isn't rape at all, but rather something called sex by surprise, which he describes as a minor and uniquely Swedish offence that carries a 5,000 krona fine, which is about $715. Yeah. Whatever sex by surprise is, it's only an offence in Sweden, not in the UK or the US or even Ibiza, Stevens said. I feel as if I'm in a surreal Swedish movie being threatened by bizarre trolls. That's not necessarily true. There are claims that actually he's not charged with anything like that, and that that doesn't even exist.
There was some the ones I read were something to do with the fact that that in Sweden, if you consent to sex and then a condom isn't used, you, there's some weird law. That's the one I've read. But
what I've read is that God, it's impossible to know. It's impossible to know what's true. What I've read is that with one of these women, it was definitely consensual sex, but then the condom broke and Arsang didn't stop. And consent can be withdrawn at any time, but it's not the same as, you know, pushing someone
the
down.
The thing that fucks me off,
but
right,
still,
is the fact that we're
still
talking about this.
Yeah.
Totally fucking irrelevant, as far as I'm concerned. That
oh, it's definitely a sideshow.
That, yeah, absolutely irrelevant. Even if Assange turned out to be a murderer right now, he just murdered someone, that doesn't change the nature of the documents, the leak, anything like that. It doesn't change a thing.
That's absolutely right.
So the thing that amazes me is basically what we're seeing is cyber war, and this is how cyber war works.
This is the DDoS, particularly.
And the rape charges and everything.
The rape charges aren't cyber war.
I think they are.
No, no. It's standard political rhetoric and spin, which is not cyber. It's ordinary. Well, it's ordinary, sneaky, underhanded political practice dating back centuries.
Yeah, good point.
What occurs to me is that, you know, Pandora's box is open. You know, in the future, more documents are going to be leaked.
I'm pretty sure I saw that on the internet.
You know, it might have nothing to do with WikiLeaks, but now that this idea is out there, you know, people are going to know that they can do it and that people will pay attention to these leaked documents.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that there's the sort of promise of leaks around banks and that sort of stuff. I almost think they would have got done better by themselves to leak the bank stuff first, because everyone fucking hates banks. You know, if they leak some bank stuff that proved that sort of thing, and then they come up with the... I don't know. Maybe they couldn't do that in timing-wise.
You know something else they've leaked, but which we don't know what it is? And this is... Now, I can't remember what it's actually called. It's called something like Insurance Policy AES256.
Mm.
Have you heard about this?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
This is an encrypted file that was released.
Yeah.
And they say that if Arsang is taken out or arrested or whatever, they will release the decryption keys.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it seems really weird and James Bondish, doesn't
weird.
It? But I'm very curious to find out what's in that file.
I don't know that everyone is. I'm trying to think where I'm going with this.
All right, well, while you think about that, we can also talk about something, you know, something that was leaked as part of the big league, and that is the list of critical infrastructure, or what the US considers critical infrastructure. And this is something that has sustained a little bit of a beating from the, you know, the right wing, the government lackeys. Who say, you know, you've given this list of targets into the hands of the terrorists. I mean, if terrorists didn't need a list of critical infrastructure to figure out what to target with those planes in 9/11, they didn't need a list of critical infrastructure to figure out, you know, which train to blow up in Spain. They didn't need a list of critical infrastructure in London when they, you know, blew dudes up on subway trains and buses. What critical infrastructure lists were required for that? You know, France didn't need a list of critical infrastructure when they blew up the Rainbow Warrior in our fucking harbour. States have sponsored terrorists.
What do you think they use it for?
The list of critical infrastructure?
Someone from Homeland Security said...
I don't know what they use it for, but it's... Did Robin just disappear?
No.
I'm still here.
Oh, you just got a message.
Philosophy correspondent Ryan Sproul is harassing us on Skype.
Do you want to get him on? His Skype sounds like shit. Tell him we'll get him on once we finish talking about WikiLeaks. Now, one of the funny things that on this list of what the US considers critical infrastructure, there is actually the Southern Cross cable link between New Zealand and the US. And I think it's fascinating that it's even on their radar. Now, I think that we both know why that would be, and that would be because we have a certain listening station in New Zealand.
It was deflated recently.
Why Hope I?
Yeah. Well... Yeah, the thing I was saying is, what is the point? So it's really interesting insight into how these places work. So the Secretary of State said, we need a list of critical security infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's like some just stupid fucking company saying, let's list all our prime assets.
Yeah.
And that's all they're really doing.
Listen, if you and I spent half a day thinking about critical infrastructure, we would probably come up with an even more comprehensive list than this. Yeah. This is only 100 things. We could probably come up with 100 things in every country.
The one thing I've seen, the other thing I've seen from WikiLeaks,
we would come up with power stations.
Yes.
We would come up with certain kinds of chemical company. We would come up probably airports. With certain mines. Yeah. Definitely airports. Probably large bus and train stations.
The whole WikiLeaks thing, though, the thing that amazes me is the quality of diplomats. Some good shit going on out there. Actually, some really, really good investigative, insightful, proper diplomacy.
Yeah.
But there's also, weirdness. I don't know.
There is a lot of weirdness. I don't understand why the governments are kind of beating this up and making it into a big deal. It's like the Streisand effect.
It is a Streisand effect.
Because the reality is that a lot of these are ordinary cables, which had no reason really to be secure, secret before, supposedly secret. Apparently there are as many as 3 million people in the US alone who have ordinary day-to-day access to all of these.
Yeah.
How is that a secret? How can that be a secret?
I don't know how the whole thing works.
It doesn't work.
Robin, you must know, surely.
One of the things that we require for democracy is transparency. Right, there is no point in having a vote if you don't have information.
That was the awesome thing I saw. Someone quoted back basically that that WikiLeaks is just the market. You know, the market to work properly needs perfect information.
Yeah,
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the most interesting thing to come out of this is the trivia fact that they call them cables, even though they're basically just super encrypted emails.
Super encrypted. You
know? Yeah.
They're not. I imagine they were sent like with Morse code.
Yeah, over some weird thing. Yeah, the thing that I'm interested by the whole separate internet, though, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, is it actually, surely the wires aren't separate. It's probably, I imagine they probably have a pair or a frequency on the Southern Cross cable all to themselves, but even then it's still the same cable. Still goes through the same stuff.
Outer net.
I can't imagine the New Zealand, the American Embassy in New Zealand having its own dedicated wire lines between New Zealand and any other country. No. It wouldn't make any sense.
It'll have an ADSL router
when good encryption is unbelievably hard to break. All right. This story is going to go on for fucking ever. WikiLeaks have done the right thing. I think the US government has probably done the wrong thing.
The other thing is the fact that it's going on forever. I think Dylan Horrocks made a really good point that basically the WikiLeaks thing is going to go on for ages. It's going to be remembered for ages, like Watergate and like the Pentagon documents, the same thing, the Pentagon Papers. And Dylan Horrocks, I think, made a really, really good point that basically is, regardless of how you're behaving right now, journalists, media, everyone, think about how you'll be viewed in 20 years' time. And do you want to be seen as the guys that protected the status quo, thought it was important for governments to have secrets? Or do you want to be looked back on as the people that helped out this bullshit, basically?
Yeah, yes. I know. I mean, I think that people who are government cronies, people who go with the status quo, people who toe the government line, they are not the ones who are remembered. The ones who are remembered are the ones who actually make change. Yeah. The ones who are remembered are the ones who actually break these stories.
Yes.
They're the only ones. Now, not that anyone actually is really ever remembered, but the only ones with any chance of making a change and being remembered are the ones that are the revolutionary thinkers and who release information, not hide it.
Yes.
It's a nice thought.
Yeah. Right, what's our next story?
Bus Mageddon. You can't fucking walk in Wellington without being run over by a bus.
Buses everywhere.
What the hell's up with the buses in Wellington?
So, just a couple of weeks ago, the buses have resumed running down Manor Street. In the 1970s, the middle section of Manor Street was turned into a pedestrian mall.
It's not called Manor's Mall anymore.
Like Curie
Square? It's not Manor's Mall anymore, it's Manor Street. Well, people still call it Manor's Mall, but,
Manor's Mall, like being savaged by a dog.
Yeah, that's how it's spelled. Well, Manor's Mall was mauled. Yep. By the clawed hand of progress.
Is it progress?
Well,
because in Auckland, we're apart from QE2 Square being broken, we're kind of going in the other direction, with traffic calming and shared roadways and slowing down traffic on Queen Street and so on.
There is a bit of that going on.
Isn't it like the way of the Dutch?
Is more access for petrol and diesel burning vehicles to pedestrian areas, is that progress? Doesn't sound like the kind of progress I'm in favour of.
And also, not to mention the electric powered trolley buses.
Oh, you've got trolley buses still, have you? I'm a little bit jealous.
what the issue is. I mean, as far as I can tell, that it is actually making the bus route shorter. There are a couple, because the buses
had to... I saw you tweet the route, and it sounded like I couldn't understand a word of it, actually. I don't know Wellington.
I tweeted a route once, and I got in a lot of trouble.
You were tweeting as you turned onto the
roads. Gentlemen don't tweet routes, but ladies can do it. The buses basically previously sort of deviated around Manor Street. Now they go straight through it, so it's... pretty much the bus route, the main sort of central bus corridor, is now a straight line.
People are going to have to drink, because I don't give a shit about Wellington buses. I'm sorry. I just want to hear about them running people over.
Okay, well, that's sort of what I'm getting to, is basically people have been hit because it's not so much the old Manor's Mall part, but the block either side of it that has gone from being one way to two way. And people are stepping out to cross the road, jaywalking, and they look in one direction, but they don't realize they have to look in the other direction.
And those scary quiet buses as well,
don't
you?
This a symptom of something I've long suspected, based on the accent, of Wellingtonians being slightly brain injured?
Well, this is the funny thing. Apparently there is a culture of jaywalking here. Discourse guest Dylan Reeve commented on this when he visited last year.
People will just cross the road in the middle of the street.
The thing is that one thing I'm really appreciative on Queen Street, especially after spending a tiny bit of time in the States, is the barnyard crossing after every phase, regardless. It's halfway through every phase. I think it's fantastic.
Oh, you mean the barn dance?
Barnes Dance, named after a traffic engineer, Mr. Barnes.
Really?
You know what's considered the largest pedestrian crossing in the world?
The one in Tokyo.
Yeah. It actually seems really small.
Yeah?
Yeah, it doesn't feel big. It feels like a smaller intersection in some ways.
But so in Wellington, it doesn't happen, right? So in Auckland, they let one road go, and then everyone crosses it, another road go, and everyone crosses. So pedestrians getting more time on the road than cars, effectively.
There are a few like that. There are a few crossings like that, but most aren't. Most will go with one particular direction of traffic.
And is that turning traffic give way to pedestrians, or is it like controlled?
That promotes jaywalking, because people don't, you know, they know that they're going to have to wait for ages to cross the way they want to cross, so they just jaywalk.
You know what stops people from jaywalking? It's lights with an indication of how long it's going to be before they change.
Yeah.
And that's something that's common in Japan. You can see just a column of coloured LEDs tell you how long it is before you get a green man. You can just see it.
The one they've added in Queen Street is the countdown to the red man, which I think is quite good as well, because it stops people blasting across on the...
one of those in Lower Hutt.
and it's brilliant. It's really good. Yeah. And a long time coming for such an obvious change. Mm. But I mean, there are even more visualizations.
If they added that, the countdown to green man, it would be perfect.
Because you get an immediate and obvious indication of how long you're going to be waiting.
And it's moving as well, so even when it's full, you feel okay.
Yep.
So ban buses in Wellington is a solution?
And there's been three people who've hit. One is an anecdotal hitting of a teenage boy. And then a couple of women have been hit. And one of them was quite badly injured. She was basically stepped out, didn't look, bus hit her. She was sort of biffed to the pavement, and it sounds like the front of her face got quite badly munted, and she might have to have surgery. And so now bus drivers are threatening to strike or to just go back to the old route, and the council are thinking about putting some sort of barriers along. But, you know, you don't want that. You don't want like a 2 meter high fence to stop people, some turning the footpath into like a cattle run.
That's what they do in the States.
And no footpaths.
You know, I think eventually people will it's just a matter of if your sort of unconscious pedestrian patterns to be rewired in your brain. That's a technical term. That'll happen eventually. You know, there have been other streets in Wellington that have changed direction or gone from one way to two way, and you know, people get a bit freaked out at first, but then they get used to it. And I think that's all that's going to have to happen.
Okay,
it's not a death road or anything.
Ryan said he's 15 away 5 minutes ago. Do you want to say don't bother, or do you want to take him on?
We've got so many stories. We're going to still be recording in 2 hours probably.
So you're going to edit back into WikiLeaks, or
tag team
edit back into WikiLeaks?
Yeah.
Edit? I'm not going to edit any of this out. This is going straight up. This is going straight up on the wires. Now, this is a funny story. This is from WikiLeaks. NZ troops had to help ineffective colleagues. No, it is funny. This is in Afghanistan. So New Zealand has the provincial reconstructive.
Yes, right. Helmand, whatever. Yep, yep.
Whatever. Well, in the next province over, the Hungarians are supposedly doing the same kind of a job. And they're so ineffective at this job. Basically, they patrol the main roads.
Yeah.
And do very minor reconstruction and do jack shit of anything else. The New Zealanders have had to step in to do their job.
To build their bridges.
To build their bridges and do everything else that they're meant to be doing. This is like counter-narcotics operations because, you know, what's funding the Taliban is poppies, right? So the Hungarian provincial reconstruction team were doing mine clearing until, surprise, surprise, a couple of their mine clearers died. When the problem is that you've got lots of mines, what do? More mine clearing, or do you completely abandon any mine clearing whatsoever? Because the order that came down from Budapest was that you abandon doing any mine clearing.
Shit.
So the New Zealanders had to head on over there and basically do their goddamn job for them. Considering we have, you know, one of the smallest standing armies in the world, why is that falling to us?
Oh, I don't know.
Compared to the Europeans, who are much closer to Afghanistan anyway.
I don't know if it's jingoism, but I get the impression that New Zealand's army does some pretty good shit.
They punch above their weight.
Yeah, when they're around. But they could do better.
They could do better.
Do you know what my theory is about the New Zealand army?
I don't know what your theory about the New Zealand army is.
I think we should keep the funding about the same or slightly less.
Yep.
And just have 50 dudes.
50 dudes.
50 guys.
Are pumped up on steroids.
Willie Abiata in charge.
Yeah.
And just 50 SAS guys who have the best equipment ever. And basically, when everyone else gets in trouble, they call on the New Zealand.
Okay, that's not what I expected you to say. Okay, so what you're saying is that we get rid of our ordinary army, yep, and we have only an SAS.
Yes.
You know, the SAS is selected from somewhere? That would be difficult. So, you know, what I think we should do is have the highest technology army in the world.
Right.
We should have drones. I mean, because we've got no Air Force to speak of.
Drones can do search and rescue as well, can't they?
And drones are actually kind of easy. And cheap.
I can make
compared
them.
You could make it. instead of having like attack jets or bombers, cruise missiles seem to do a pretty good job. And I mean, they have to patrol our coastal area. That seems like the biggest job of our Navy, apart from, you know, going and helping in Fiji or wherever, whenever there's a cyclone.
We need a couple of boats.
We need a couple of boats, how many big boats do we need? We are an island nation. Hmm. Do you know what covers ground faster than a boat? Any fucking thing else. Boats are slow. You know what's fast? Planes.
What about?
And you know what's cheaper than a plane with a person in it? Plane with no person in it.
The guy that's rowing the Tasman falls out and needs help. You need a boat.
Then we can have really fast boats. And not very many of them that go out there when they're needed. And aside from that, we just have friggin' drones patrolling our waters.
80 gil or whatever, yeah.
And then we can have much better coverage than having a couple of friggin' frigates that cost us how much each time and then turn out to be shit made by goddamn Australians. Encouraging our own higher technology industry by building the best drones in the world. Or at least trying to compete with the Americans on that.
Yep.
Why not? And then we could export them to, you know, friendly nations who would also want to use them. I'm not saying they have to be the horrible ones which, you know, assassinate Palestinians. Okay, no, they can be unarmed.
Devil's advocate, what about when there's a flood or an earthquake and everything turns to shit and you need the army to come in and feed you?
Yeah, but do we need to call them an army? Yeah, because our army does do a really great job around the Pacific helping out whenever there's a disaster.
Yeah.
Do we need to call them an army? Can we call them something else?
What?
I don't know what else you call them. Well, why if their key job is helping out when there's a flood, why do they have guns?
Guys with shovels.
Why do they have guns? Do they need guns? Do they need to be trained in how to kill people? If their job is the wild, crazy,
you know, locals who've gone mad because they've run out of water and they're getting cholera
with guns.
Yes.
When is that the best option? When is that ever the best option?
I don't know.
More guns make any situation worse.
I have a name for the army.
Oh yes.
Ngāti Tumatonga Action Elite Force.
Ngāti Tumatonga Action Elite Force.
Yep. Ngāti Tumatonga is the name that
something sort of, about protecting our treasure?
It means something like Tumatonga means something like war or god of war. I should Google it. I just kind of Googled that.
Tonga as well sounded like treasures.
Yeah.
Who knows? But no, I like the idea, Action Elite, yeah.
Action Elite. Ignore the hinges on their knees and elbows.
Army is so ingrained with the human psyche, I think, is that the problem is that you don't get young boys to join a digging up force or a cleaning up force.
Yep.
Because they don't get to play with guns.
Yeah, but you do get unemployed people having compulsory... Well, I mean, we call it whatever we want. Compulsory civilian something service. I'm not against compulsory military service under some guys. Not necessarily actual shooting, but, you know, some kind of compulsory service that teaches people who maybe don't go into higher education or who can't, you know, make some excuse about having flat feet. I don't have a problem with teaching them.
You know what?
You can join the welfare reform group.
When I was 18, I was on the dole.
People I'd hate. When you were 18, you were on the dole. Me too.
I was on the dole. And I got a letter from my case manager who wanted me to come in and discuss an opportunity with him. Oh. And they were doing this when National was in government, and they had this like little military training thing for unemployed youth. And he's like, I want you to go on this. And it was like going out to the old military camp sort of in Narrawarrie. And I just thought, oh, my God, I could not think of anything more depressing. And I just went, oh, I'd rather do something closer to Hamilton.
Than Narrawarrie.
So he said, you know, go down and check out the opportunities, other training opportunities. And I didn't qualify for any of them because I had School C.
If we had something like a compulsory military service, we could have a militia rather than a standing army. And then instead of having a standing army of, I don't even know how many it is, 10,000 people?
We're in 10,000.
20,000?
New Zealand?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Fuck yes. There's mechanics and drivers and cooks and a little impromptu reserve army.
What about all those people who did fitness boot camps?
Alright, I'm sorry, Robin.
If I had to guess I would say 5,000 tops.
Are you talking about soldiers? Because there's a hell of a lot more people involved.
Army.
All right. Okay. According to this website, which is wikipedia.org.
Donate to Jimmy
Wales. New Zealand. Active standing army, 9,702. Reserve, 2,200. Total.
1,200.
Yeah, 12,000. 1,200? So 12,000.
Okay, so you were a little bit closer than I was.
Yes, I was. And I think, I don't know, let's see exactly what's included here. Is this soldiers or is this cooks?
Well, no, cooks are soldiers.
This is the number of troops. They say troops.
Yeah, well, troops are soldiers. Yeah, troops are everyone you need to go to war.
Does it have soldiers?
No, girls aren't soldiers. Don't be silly.
I'm sorry. I want to check. I want to know exactly what's being included here, because I think that there's... I don't think this includes cooks and drivers and medics and office workers and filing assistants and the accountants and the middle managers. I don't think that this includes that. So I would say that you were dead wrong.
Mm.
But did you hear what I said about those fitness boot camp people?
Yeah.
You know, you see them at this time of year, first thing in the morning, running around parks, doing push-ups with some ex-military guy yelling at them so they can get their beach body ready for summer. They'd have, you know, some pretty good skills. They could be called up in an emergency.
Yeah, you should.
Personal trainers.
And the people who do them, like corporate people who want to get fit for the summer.
Just pull everyone out of the Les Mills spin class and, get them
to... Well, that is the idea of a militia rather than a standing army. The idea is that instead of soldiers who live in a camp, you have people who you train how to fight, and we would presumably teach them defensive guerrilla asymmetric warfare for when the Indonesians finally decide that we're too tasty a target and make their way through Australia to us. And they'd just quietly have whatever in their closet, like who does it? The Norwegians or someone?
Switzerland.
So they've got probably a standing army as well as a militia. Mm. Everyone who goes through the compulsory military service gets to keep a rifle and some amount of ammunition, and they're in a cupboard at their house. And so if they're ever invaded by the Germans, well, they'll be destroyed just like last time. But they'll then be able to, form an armed underground and mount a resistance.
Which is
the only hope we'd have if we were ever invaded. We don't have a standing army to discourage invasion.
No.
What we have to discourage invasion is thousands of kilometres of ocean surrounding us on all sides. And also a general lack of tasty minerals and oil. Anyway, this is all very depressing. Anyway, the point really was that we should do drones, not airplanes, and we should do missiles, not airplanes, and we should do drones, not boats, and we should do
something to defend ourselves from Islam.
I think that the thing to defend ourselves from Islam is to realise that Islam is not really a threat.
No, it's not. Are you sure? No,
there's heaps of Muslims who live in New Zealand, and they're cool, just like.
No, I thought that someone in the FBI said that Islam was a threat to national security.
Ours or theirs?
Everyone's. I don't know. Anyway, that was a poor segue. But did you hear about the guy in the mosque that was inciting terrorist acts?
No, I didn't hear about this.
That's awesome. No, it's not awesome, actually. A worshipper at a Californian mosque.
Yep.
His fellow mosque mates referred him to the FBI because he was incredibly extremist and saying, let's go bomb some shit. Turns out he was a FBI plant.
Yep.
That was incredible. But the most interesting thing about it is that when this page comes up, his handler told him that he needed to be embedded in a mosque and look out for them because he was trained to infiltrate mosques, and the handler said to him that Islam is a threat to our national security, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah. I think this is actually this is COINTELPRO. This is standard part of FBI, it's called being an agent provocateur. And this is really common. Police forces use these all around the world.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a very common way they use them is to incite violence in crowds and turn them into riots, so that police can then wade in and smash people up.
I remember those guys. Usually, often, I remember them from student protests.
Right, and these are the guys who are. That they look like the insane anarchists trying to get people to have a fight. And then as soon as people are like, what are you talking about? Fuck off. And people try and lay hands on them. They are the ones that can easily slip through the police lines.
Yeah.
Hey, Morgan, strangely enough. And I think this is not some really crazy... good idea if you swore a lot and drank lots of beer and said lots of really obnoxious statements and that sort of thing. Yeah, let's do it, guys.
I think Robin's being...
it wasn't very subtle, was it?
No.
But I can do it, Robin, just for you, buddy.
Actually, I should have gone the other way. I should have said, we shouldn't swear. We should actually be more respectful of people.
Oh, right. That would be a better way to...
Reverse psychology, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm an expert. Agent provocateur.
Congratulations. Now, that sounded like a conspiracy theory, really, didn't it? But there are just countless examples.
Of people being embedded in,
And, God, it's just all depressing. It's depressing to think of Western democratic governments or bodies acting for them just behaving so underhandedly.
It's the thing that gets me is the after-the-fact, post-facto obviousness of it all. Like Afghanistan, the Mujahideen... You know, how do they know it's not going to... How do they forget it is going to go horribly, horribly wrong?
Yeah, arming and training the Mujahideen, how can that possibly go bad?
Over and over again, and Saddam,
countless
others.
Yeah, yeah, madness, complete madness. It always goes wrong.
So the when they're about to invade Iraq, my thought process at the time said, this is totally fucked, it's the wrong thing to do, they're going to end up with... A rogue state, basically.
And the excuse is false.
Yeah, yeah.
9/11.
But my,
Iraq?
Yeah, exactly. But in my head I said, they must know something, because they're a government, and they must know something that I don't know, and therefore they're choosing to do this. But it turns out to be totally...
No. It was that they just wanted to get in there and get near the oil and get in the Middle East, and I don't even know what. Revenge for his daddy getting beat up, George Bush? Is that what it was?
I don't know, but how do they... They must have known it was going to go all fucking pear-shaped. Completely pear-shaped.
Or did they think that God was on their side in their crusade in the Middle East?
Like you say, incredibly depressing.
It's completely depressing. And a transparent, open government can't really get away with it.
No.
This is why secrets are a bad thing. Mm. Secrets are always a bad thing. Just watch a movie. Watch any movie. And when people keep secrets, everything goes wrong. If you see a zombie, say, hey, guys, I can see a zombie.
Why would you keep zombies secret?
Why would you keep zombies secret? I don't know.
Unless your girlfriend was one.
It's or your daughter.
Mm.
Spoilers! Walking Dead! Have you been watching Walking Dead, Ben?
No.
Oh, shit, I've only seen the first episode. Thank you, Morgan. What? You were just being an agent provocateur, weren't you?
Yes.
You're being an ass, is what you're being.
I am an ass.
You're not an ass.
Hey, what's our next story?
Speaking of ass.
Yeah?
Do you know there was some bacteria made of arsenic?
Oh my God, Ben, really? That's the way we're...
It wasn't made of arsenic anyway.
It consumed arsenic instead of sulfur or something, right?
Phosphate. It used arsenate in its mechanical thing. And it was even less than that. They put two samples into, you know, two different medium, and the bacteria in the arsenate grew. The bacteria in the phosphate, which is what a living organism would normally use, grew a shitload.
Yeah. So I think the best bacteria that coped in the arsenic coped at a rate of 60% as well as it did in the phosphate.
It's hard to get excited.
Well, you've been married for a very long time.
but they made the announcement so exciting and over the top, but was it really that exciting?
It wasn't exciting because it wasn't on another planet.
That's what I was expecting. Life on maybe one of Mars's...
It was the xenobiology announcement.
It was NASA saying it as well.
It was NASA.
Oh, fuck you. So, I mean, why are they talking about some dead lake in the States somewhere? What's the point of that?
Well, because there are planets that have a largely arsenic... arsenic,
we don't want to go there. We can't talk to them.
No.
So, I mean, we've got extremophiles all over the place.
XKCD had a brilliant cartoon on arsenic-based life forms.
Oh, yes?
They said we should, as part of the announcement, we should have, like, you know, themed party favours.
Yeah.
So they had arsenic-themed party favours.
Oh, dear. Don't eat them.
Yes, it was good.
It'll go wrong. It'll go horribly, horribly wrong. Mm. Hey, Ben.
Yes, Morgan.
When did you choose to go straight?
When did I choose to go straight?
Yeah.
Don't remember.
You don't remember?
No.
I'm still mulling it over, apparently.
Yeah.
People think that my voice sounds gay.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought me with my soft R's would sound like Peter Woparty a lot of the time and a bit gay.
Woparty?
Peter Woparty often sounds like he says Peter Woparty.
I don't know who that is.
A league commentator.
So I'd have to watch League to know what the hell you're talking about. So does this explain why you bought a shitty beer over? I used to DB Bitter in the green cans with the dogs.
But it's the problem with living out west. You have to watch League and drink shitty beer.
You have to watch League. I don't believe it.
No, I choose to. It's good. I like it.
As long as you don't watch... I don't really care what you watch. I don't even know what I was going to say. Golf's actually fun to watch. I enjoy watching golf.
Oh. No, I can't watch golf. Not really, anyway.
Golf's fun.
I think it's really exciting.
Oh, and it's only exciting when it's good, when it's really good players. But even then, I don't really like it. What I really like is martial arts. K1, UFC, it's good stuff.
But there are always just guys rolling around on the ground, like elbowing each other.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
The thing that I was amazed by when I saw one of those the other day when I turned, it was just changing channels, was the amount of blood.
Yeah.
Blood dripping everywhere. It's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
They must get hepatitis and AIDS tests and stuff all the time.
Oh, no doubt. Also, I mean, those are fit motherfuckers.
Right.
I'm not saying that fit people can't get AIDS, but I think
that's... I saw some martial arts of some description, and a guy got kicked and his leg had previously been broken and it snapped again and it was just kind of dangling. In the middle of his leg.
Yeah, I've seen that.
That's horrendous.
Yeah. I even on a much milder scale than that, I saw someone on The Ultimate Fighter, which is a UFC affiliated series, get his nose broken.
Mm.
God, oh my God, it looked bad. So bad. And that's nothing compared to snapping your leg in half. Christ. Those people, man, it's like watching Roman gladiators.
Mm.
And in fact, the only way they could make it better would be if they threw a wild animal in there, really spice things up.
I mean, it is the modern form of gladiators, isn't it?
Doesn't feel that modern.
They don't kill people at the end.
Yeah. Well, Ben, your voice sounded quite hot when you said wild animal. Wild. You didn't sound gay. It sounded quite...
Wild animal.
Yeah, like that.
He's taken his spoffle off his mic. That's why it sounds so hot.
No more spoffle. Spoffle!
What other stories have we got this week?
Well, I was going to launch into the story about when did you decide to be straight.
Oh,
but
yes,
actually, it's just a YouTube for people to watch, so I'll put that in the show notes. Mm. Now, it won't reveal much to our audience, who I think are kind of by definition, you know, people of taste and dignity and distinction, probably who've put a great deal of consideration into things and realised that, you know, people or whatever they are, we're all on a spectrum.
And who hasn't looked at a really hot guy sometimes and thought about it?
And thought, I really want to suck that cock. I want to treat your balls like a big loose meat sandwich full of mayonnaise. I just can't wait. Yeah.
Now you're just putting me off. See, I would, you know.
What?
Anyway.
You never had
the mayonnaise. Is there a vegan alternative?
aioli? No, hummus. Hummus. You want to suck that hummus out of there?
It's all gritty, though, hummus.
Not if it's been made right. It's not necessarily gritty. It's, I mean, there's a texture.
Tahini is a lot smoother than hummus.
I guess it depends on how it's made. I mean, hummus is made with chickpeas and lemon juice and olive oil, right? And garlic.
Chickpeas don't sound very gay. They sound a bit girly.
So well, Galilee and Tyre, sorry, Middle East.
I've taken you off track.
You
were just
yes.
saying that it's okay to be gay, basically. Is that right?
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say that everyone's on a spectrum. Some people are good, some people are gay, and some people aren't, and some people are both, and some people have different tendencies. And I think, you know, people probably even, some people are quite fluid through their lives.
Mm.
More commonly women than men, I think. But
what is with that?
Women occasionally rolling around with a girl. I don't know. It's because everyone likes tits.
Mm.
Girls are hot, and other girls can see it. Have you got a story?
I've got a story that just horrifies me.
Does it horrify? Wow.
What's wrong again?
Did you just, like, slip off some kind of large nylon bodysuit that you were wearing that had a big chunky plastic zip?
It sounded like
just rearranged. Sorry.
It just sounded like someone whipping a shirt off or something. It was bizarre.
It would have been a pillow.
Was it? Is it a robot pillow?
Yes.
Does it cuddle you and does it move like it's breathing and does it whisper into your ear?
It tells me I'm a special girl.
Hey, Robin.
Yes.
Did you know that you're not our only senior commentator?
What? Is there another?
There is. Senior philosophy commentator, Ryan Sproul.
I see I've come at just at the right time.
Senior philosophy commentator, Ryan Sproul.
Yes, we have been drinking really, really shitty beer because for some reason we let Ben buy it this week.
Can we get your opinion on this beer, Ryan, officially?
Well, I can tell you from the back of the bottle that it is brewed in the spirit of the early Otago pioneers.
I imagine the spirit of the Otago pioneers is like some man who has like a secret Chinese wife and someone has syphilis.
Maybe we should call these guys up and ask them how authentic they are.
It would be nice to be able to call them up, but I don't expect their phones will work, given that fucking domain name doesn't work.
That'd be great, though, if you called them in the middle of the night and left a message on their answering machine.
Your
said,
beer sucks, asshole!
Do you guys have syphilis, or are you not really fucking original?
Did you know, philosophy commentator Ryan Sproul,
mm-hmm.
that everybody is going to die?
God knows, I've made my position on the mortality of man perfectly clear.
Did you know that people with a university degree fear death less than those with a lower literacy level?
I didn't know that.
Ignorant people are very afraid of death. And people who are educated.
What could possibly be the difference, though?
But I went through a period of being really afraid of death.
I am still going through that period.
Does that mean I became non-ignorant?
Possibly. Did you suffer a slight bang on the head?
No. I actually had someone close to me die, which took away my fear of death.
You know what?
Oh no!
A
fear, having no fear of death is a symptom, apparently, according to this study, of having of not being an ignorant fucking dumbass.
Mm.
So at the same time,
what we're saying is you're ignorant and I'm not.
Or I know how easy it is to kill a man.
How about you, Robin? Are you scared of death?
I don't think I am. Oh, I don't know. Maybe a little bit if I think about it too much.
You fucking should be, Robin.
You haven't seen the look
on
Morgan's face.
I've got fear of a black planet on my iPod.
Yeah. It takes a nation of millions to hold us back, Robin.
Totally.
Are you all right there, Ben?
This is fucking disgusting. Yeah,
it's about, really bad.
I'm just about to vomit.
Clip. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah.
Scared of death.
Yeah, but, you know, bygones, whatever. It's in the past. At the same time as I started being afraid of death, I also gained a really terrible fear of heights to the point where, you know, the fear fall at Rainbow's End? Same thing at the Tokyo Dome. I didn't write it. Girlfriend wrote it, no problem. And the roller coaster there just about made me piss. So I only wrote it four times. Terrifying.
I don't know.
Fucking terrifying.
I don't know.
I went up in a Ferris wheel and I almost couldn't move.
Really?
Yeah. I almost couldn't move.
I don't know if I'm healthily scared of heights or not, because I couldn't get within 2 meters of the edge at the Grand Canyon, but that's 1,000 meters straight down. So I thought I was actually probably just sane. I'd be okay on a Ferris wheel, a little bit dodgy, but okay.
Yeah, I didn't like being able to see rust. Also, the fact that there was no hub on this Ferris wheel.
What?
No hub. The roller coaster goes through the middle of the Ferris wheel. Holy shit.
All right, so it's on rollers.
It is amazing. The roller coaster also goes through a building. It's amazing. So you go up to the top of this. I don't know. I don't actually know what the height of the thing is. I mean, everyone already knows that roller coasters are gravity driven. You go up to the top of a hill, and then you just the rest of it is just rolling.
Yeah.
This thing went up unbelievably high. It didn't do a loop. What it did was it almost felt like you were diving kind of over vertical.
Mm.
But if you looked at it sideways, you weren't quite. And that bit there, just I was terrified. They take photos of the riders. They take a photo twice. Now, Rainbow's End, they like to take a photo as you arrive at the end. On this thing, they take a photo as you leave. And I always like had my hand in front of my face, like rubbing my eyes in fear.
Yeah.
And then they take another one when you're like halfway through the ride. My girlfriend was always like arms up in the air, huge grin on her face. And I was just gripping this thing with my mouth open, just staring ahead.
The thing with the you move around on those roller coasters, and that's what shits me. That's giving me the shits, is that I'm sure I'm going to fall out of the
fact
and that, also because you're fat.
Yeah.
You can't pull the bar down properly.
Yeah, the fact that this one required
you must be this thin to ride the roller coaster.
It had a seatbelt as well as the over the shoulder thing, so like two restraints. It was like, okay, so you're not really confident about the over the shoulder thing. Is that the problem here? Oh shit! But Space Mountain was no problem, and that one's in the dark. Oh. That was brilliant.
I went on the SpongeBob ride at Dreamworld. Yeah. I was there recently. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, was it? Tell me.
Yeah, because there was.
Were you scared at any point?
Actually, there are some really scary rides there, like the thing that the vertical drop and all sorts of crazy things. But I like the light roller coasters, the ones that you can go on and just come out going, "Oh, that was fun."
Yeah.
And I also went on the Wiggles Big Red Car ride, which I was with my brother, and he didn't want to go on it, and I said, "Dude, no one cool is here to see you." And he went on it, and I was singing along to the Wiggles songs, and some little girl turned around and looked at me like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
You sound crazy like you're brain damaged. You've been in Wellington for too long, Robin.
I honestly can't tell who, I mean, if she's as drunk as you guys or if she's as sober as Sunday.
As far
I have
as
vodka. No, I've...
She hasn't been drinking.
High on God.
Cut her off.
Only rationalists on this podcast.
Rationalists and polytheists. Because if you believe in multiple gods, basically don't believe in any god, in my humble opinion. If everything is a god, nothing's a god. Philosopher, any comment?
I think you mean pantheists, and sure, why not?
That's what I meant, pan. Mm. Poly, pan, you know.
Poly is...
All or many,
words that mean
all
different
many,
things.
Whatever.
Fuck it.
I'm a pantheist.
Anything that isn't a monotheist, really. I mean, because the polytheists will believe in, like, here is a thing which will do our harvest, and here is a thing which will take care of us after death, and here is a thing which dictates, you know, our love life.
You know what? Who knows? I don't know what they believe. I've never been one. And
a polytheist?
Yeah, and I've come to start to kind of think that maybe I'll never really get into the head of anybody's little belief system unless I'm actually one.
Yeah.
Who knows what they believe?
Is Shinto poly or pan?
It's animistic, so it's kind of poly, but I'm not sure if you would call all of those things gods.
So I was talking to a Shinto woman a couple of weeks ago, and she said that...
Not actually interested in my opinion at all. You just wanted to seg into your own little story about the Shinto.
Yeah, shut the fuck
up. Hey, have you been in Japan recently?
I hardly been talking about it at all. I mean, literally, I didn't...
No,
didn't
tell me about the Shinto woman.
Well, she was explaining how easy it was for the Japanese to welcome Buddhism into the fold because they already had multiple gods. So it was easy for them to say, hey, what's with a few more?
Yeah.
Infinite number one.
Well, that's how Christianity got into the Roman Empire to begin with. What's one more god?
Tasty snack people for your lions. They should have been more thorough with that.
I don't...
Like Hitler.
No, you're right. I don't like that. But Buddhism, right, there is no thi.
Yeah.
There's no God in Buddhism, really, is there? There's just Nirvana.
Yeah, not specifically, yeah.
Yeah.
Is like Tathagata Buddha not a God? Because, I mean, if your arm can reach to the end of the universe, you're not a human.
Yeah, no, to some degree, the idea and the way that Tathagata is described has analogies in Christian and Islamic notions of God, mystically speaking.
I think if everyone was more open, was pantheistic,
we'd have less conflict. Hang on, I'm going to get my pen and paper. Yeah.
Don't you think there would be less conflict? Because if it wasn't like my God versus your God, and they were even really the same God, if everyone was like, we've all got multiple gods, then there'd be less conflict.
There would, right and away. There was.
This fucking monotheism, it's
huge problem. And it's it's been the evolutionarily, mimetically kind of the most successful mind virus.
Obviously,
but it's still it seems like the weakest.
Well, it demonstrably isn't,
and kind of the most fair call.
It's because it's Idiocracy all over again. It's the weakest in that it's the simplest to understand.
Yeah.
So therefore, and you don't have to remember all the gods' names.
That was it. So the Christians turned up. Hey guys, there's just one God. And the Romans are like, oh, fuck, awesome. Yes. I'm tired of remembering all this bullshit.
I keep forgetting exactly. Which is the Roman and which is the Greek name.
Who am I praying to? God. Yeah. Oh, fuck, that's sweet as. That's
honestly, you know, you think about what people want out of life today.
It's a religious equivalent of Dear Sir, to whom it may concern.
Yeah, exactly. It's and reality TV and the president, all of it. Just simple. Forget about the fucking houses of parliament and senates and things. Just there's one dude.
We voted for Democrat.
Yeah, exactly.
Who didn't vote for?
Republicans are bad. It's
Republican.
Black and white.
Yeah.
Up and down.
Wow. So how are we going to get back to Windows Home Server?
Just like that. What do they do? They remove disk spanning from Windows Home Server. There is no God.
So Windows Home Server, what is that?
It's Windows Server 2003. With some
it basically runs on NAS's, Network Attached Storage. So this is a little box that you put your home or at your very small office.
It's a full server. It's Windows Server, so it needs basically a PC to run. So, But one thing
most of the NASs that it runs on don't seem like full PCs. They seem more like a NAS or a RAID because they have small processors, little memory, and no monitor and no keyboard attached.
Yeah,
they're managed over the network and they just have a bunch of hard drive stuffed in them.
The one thing I thought was interesting about Windows Server was Windows Home Server was its ability to back up by sectors. So if you had the same DLL on 10 computers, it just backs it up once.
Yeah,
which I thought was very cool.
I like to have my DLLs well backed up, Ben. My doctor said that it was
even
important.
I'm scowling right now because I'm so disinterested by this conversation.
Yeah. Anyway, the thing is, now here's the reason I wanted.
This is a comedy podcast.
The reason I wanted to talk about it was that I was going to buy a Windows Home Server from HP, and then Microsoft said we're releasing a new version, and HP said we're not making any more Windows Home Servers
because it's so fucked.
Because it's now so fucked. So Microsoft have taken a product which was universally liked, although didn't sell in huge numbers, and wrecked it. For why? I don't know. Next story, assholes.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So this, the show has gone completely off the rails.
Which is how we like it.
Is it how our listeners like it?
I think, and you can start it from here, you should delete the last 27 minutes of recording and go straight to Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
I'd say this one's actually going to be for Robin, but then everyone else can give it a go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robin, your word is lock block.
Lock block. I need to think of something hilarious. Lock block.
Can you say fuck? Because he'll have to bleep that.
Cunt fuck.
Oh, you said that so nicely. It seems like
cunt
a shame.
Face. Cunt fixed.
Jimmy face.
You're so proper, Robin. I love it.
I can talk nicely if I think about it.
Like a lady.
I think every lady should be able to say cunt with grace and style.
I think only women should be allowed to say.
Have you ever seen the Vagina Monologues?
God, no, it's for women only, you lunatic.
I saw it in Melbourne, and at one point they made everyone say cunt, and all the mothers, they said, all the mothers say cunt, and it was this really lovely cunt. What was it?
Lock block.
Lock block. It sounds like, I'm trying to think. All I can think of is a block of ice that you put down your pants to quell the fires of desire.
That's excellent, Robin. Television's Ben Gracewood.
Lock block. Well, obviously, it's obviously harks back to cock block in some way, which is one male stopping another male having sex or landing a lady. So,
I did the best cock block of all time. I was at Pay Road Ballroom and I was playing pool with my ex-girlfriend and another female friend of ours. And I was at the other end of the table. So unbalanced group, one male and two, maybe it was even three females. And there's a small crew of boys at the next table over, sausage party over going on over there. And one of them very clearly started macking on my girlfriend. I was larger than any of these bitches. And I was also at the time training like three times a day in karate, which made me unbelievably aggressive.
Yes.
And so what I do, I didn't even say a word to him. I just went and leaned up against the wall, back to him, directly between him and my girlfriend. And he kept trying to talk, and I was just ignoring him. And then he was like, okay. and then finally got the idea and fucked off back to his goddamn pool game. And then I continued playing my game as well. And I thought that was wonderful, as you were, Ben.
Cock block. Lock block.
Lock block.
I'm going to say it's the piece of wood you put at an angle on the back of an apartment door in American movies to stop someone opening it.
Like under the handle?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent, Ben. Senior philosophy commentator, Ryan Sproul.
It's when you're about to stick your erect penis into a Scottish lake.
Before you go any further, Ryan, L-O-C-K.
Oh, well, I don't know then.
I'd like to guess one. And that is basically using a padlock, like a cock ring. Getting a little bit too stuck and having a blockage, maybe a clot in your cock.
Oh, a cock clot.
A cock clot, but caused by a lock block.
A lock block cock clot.
Exactly. And I would be wrong. Senior philosophy commentator Ryan Sproul, you are completely fucking wrong.
Well, you didn't give me the correct spelling, so.
Television's Benedict Ricewood, you're wrong. And senior cultural commentator Robin Gallagher, you're wrong. It's very simple. When one person prematurely tries to open the passenger door on a vehicle while the driver simultaneously tries to unlock the door, causing it to relock and keep the passenger outside. Uh-huh. Why did you all go sexual?
That's actually something that needs a word.
Yeah. Yes, and lock block is the word. Everyone's been there.
My son does it all the time.
Yep, and I do it all the time as well. And that has been your Discourse Weekly Show, Urban Dictionary Word of the Week. Finally, something that went right on this show. No one's going to know because I'm going to cut all of this and re-record a new episode of the show tomorrow by myself on my lunch break. I'm going to go and give blood so that I put myself into the right state of mind. Have none of those little sugar biscuits and no juice. And then I'm going to come back here. I'm going to faint.
Three Ranfurlies.
Three. I'm going to have however many are left, which probably numbers less
two.
Than, right. I'm going to have two Ranfurlies and then I'm going to fall down. Ryan Sproul, you just looked at your clock. Does that mean you have to leave?
No, I've got.
He says,
clock block.
Clock block.
Oh man, you guys have been hitting those Ranfurlies because that wasn't even that funny.
That was pretty funny, Robin.
I liked it. Senior cultural commentator Robin Gallagher.
No, you've got me for about 10 minutes, sorry. I can leave now if you like. I've bollocked it all up so far.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Discourse Weekly Show.
Hey, did you know I was in a bar the other night?
It sounds like you.
And this guy says, hey, Ryan, love you in discourse.
Holy shit.
Really?
I know him, but...
I had someone say to me in a bar on Friday.
Hey, titties. He's,
oh, God. Well, that was you in a bar.
Hey, this girl is not wearing a cardigan and it's Wellington. She must be a slapper.
I get that a lot. It's the man really talking.
No, it's my stereotype. My prejudice against Wellington ladies as wearing cardigans. Cardigans, which are probably the least sexy garment known to men.
You were in a bar, Robin.
And a dude said to me that he listened to Discourse and enjoyed it.
Wow. Far
so out. There you go.
Now, I'm not surprised because it is New Zealand's best podcast,
yes.
This episode accepted. I really hope that no one considering sponsoring this show listened only to this one.
Which episode would you recommend?
Five.
Really?
Four.
No, go two. Back to five because I was on five. Really, I was on... No, four. Oh, fuck.
For a long time, my favourite, and by long time, I mean, it hasn't really been a long time in the discourse history. For a long time, my favourite episode was always just the latest episode. That is no longer true.
As of tonight.
No. That's true as of the night we recorded two.
Oh.
And since then, I haven't really been entirely happy.
Always harking back to the good old days.
I'm not wishing to bum you out, audience.
But it's all been downhill.
It's all been downhill.
There's nothing but downhill to go.
We were on a roll at the beginning of this podcast, though. I think that was good.
It was good. That's why I'm going to cut this a lot.
Ben's so lovely.
That's the Ranfurly talking again.
So now our problem is that we've got too many people talking. I felt like that the whole episode.
Well, you're fucked now because nobody's talking.
Yeah, but I can cut silence. It's hard to sort out the talking over.
That's true.
Yeah.
So what? Everybody shut up?
A problem is that I don't talk over people as much as I used to because apparently people didn't like it. But listening to the audience is always a mistake because the reason they're the fucking audience is that they listen to the goddamn show the way it was and then they try to change it. You're already listening, asshole! Wow, I clipped that whole thing. That was great.
How's the listenership going? Is that measurable?
We're at 500 now.
What?
Did you just make that number up?
No, we've got 500 listeners, don't we?
Eh? No.
I thought if I exuded false confidence, it would help our listenership. If people were listening thought, shit, 500 people listen to this, I better tell my friends.
Ben, we don't have 500 listeners.
No, we've got a few there.
We have a few. We have far more than a few. We have over five. If anything, our viewership is really, really, really down.
What are we down to?
The thing is that as the podcast increases in popularity, our website viewership actually goes down. The feed burner stats are continually increasing. The trend is positive. I'm not going to say exactly what the numbers are, but our subscribers have never been higher than they are. And may never be as high again after episode 9.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
But yeah, it's funny that people don't hit the website because they just let their
get it in iTunes.
Do all the work, yeah.
Yep. Feedburner tells me exactly where they're coming from and they're getting it in iTunes and they're not visiting the website. There's not really much point in visiting the website because the show notes are in iTunes.
The show notes on iTunes.
Show notes are on iTunes.
The show notes are on iTunes.
Yep. But you don't get the image gallery, and I don't think you get. I think the links all disappear, so kind of diminished value. And also, the videos aren't attached. So I say visit the site because the site is really good.
It's a fun site to visit, regardless of whether you heard the iPod or the podcast or not. I'm so tired, I'm hallucinating.
No, that was good, Robin. That was 10 seconds. That could probably make up the entire podcast after we cut out all the shit.
Sure. Robin Gallagher, senior cultural commentator and Wellington correspondent. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Can I just say one thing? I'm going to be unemployed in a couple of weeks' time. Give me a job.
Oh, cool.
So you don't want to be unemployed? Why have you quit your job without getting a new job if you don't want to be unemployed?
Some things just have to be done. Well, my contract ends.
Oh, you're a contractor.
I'm a contractor.
Oh, you dirty bastard. I bet that's been really lucrative. No wonder you're taking a few months off.
I'm not. I'm actually an employee on a year-long contract.
You're an employee with a fixed-term contract. Oh, that should be illegal. Fuck that.
Mm.
I think if you're a contractor, you should get contract rights.
It's a little weird thing, but that's how it goes. But I've just decided life choice.
Well, I'm sure you'll have no trouble getting another really boring government job in Wellington. Have you got a lot of grey suits and cardigans, Robin?
No, they don't wear grey suits, they wear black. Everyone in government wears black. I was walking along
this morning. Black suits are for funerals.
Black cardigans.
Yeah.
Everyone wears black who works in government. It's really weird.
What does everyone wear who works in marketing? Senior philosophy commentator.
Just T-shirts, shorts, sandals, whatever.
Whatever, ponytails.
Yeah, and if a client comes in, that's cool because they see how totally loose and free you are and so creative.
Yeah.
Hip cats.
Robin Gallagher?
Yes.
Thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye, Robin. I'll cut the satellite link.
Okay. One less voice. Unfortunately, it's the only voice with any actual talent. The only voice that gives us any credibility. Senior philosophy commentator Ryan Sproul.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for joining us.
See ya.
Ciao, bro.
Discourse.
And it was really great having our senior commentators. Have we had them previously on the same show?
No.
Together?
No, we haven't.
No? Yeah, it was. I really enjoyed having them on. Didn't quite have the balance exactly right there. So I hope that it was enjoyable for our listeners.
Yeah.
So last few things. What's coming up? Things that are coming up, most obvious amongst them is Christmas.
Yeah, it is. It's getting close to Christmas, isn't it?
It's getting very close to Christmas. Mm. Think about what Christmas actually means to you, and think about what Christmas really means in New Zealand. You might have noticed, Ben, that when you came into studio into the Discourse studio complex, that there's a large Christmas tree in the entryway there.
I didn't actually notice at all.
You didn't notice that, Ben?
I'm so unobservant.
So, I mean, walking past that, both of us wearing jandals and T-shirts today, and walking past what is really a symbol of a winter Christmas,
snowy.
Really, it tells us that Christmas is not really is it? I really don't think it is.
It isn't, but...
Definitely not this time of year. It's not a time of year.
The summer
break,
the big
woolly socks. I mean, Santa and all the fur-lined thing and the hat and big boots.
But the summer break is what Christmas is all about for me.
Yeah,
the summer break. And
yeah, and how much of your summer break is about Jesus?
None at all. But
none.
Christmas, when you got with young kids, Christmas takes on a whole new
meaning. Have you lied to your kids about Santa?
No.
You don't. Have you talked about Santa at all?
Yeah, he knows. The youngest one.
He knows that some people believe in Santa.
Youngest one's too young, but yeah, no. Yeah, we talk about Santa and we talk about Jesus.
Jesus.
He knows that people think that Jesus was born on this date. He knows that the date was commandeered from pagan midwinter solstice.
Yep. Yeah. Where it makes much more sense, yeah. And has a much longer history.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so now it must be. Now, I mean, I don't know if I'm ever going to have children. The idea has some interest to me. Mm. I think that my girlfriend would have really have really great kids. I'm just meeting her nieces. They're just, yeah. I mean, the favorite kids I've ever met in my life.
Awesome.
They're amazing. They're absolutely amazing kids, and I can see a lot of her in them.
Yeah.
So I can almost imagine, having kids that wonderful. The idea, being quite a staunch kind of anti-religion, very strong atheist, the idea of having kids brought up in a world which is so full of these really effective and powerfully developed mind viruses in the form of religion, which are introduced to them in such positive ways. I mean, Christmas is a time where they're given presents more probably even than on their birthday. Yes. And they're also at the same time introduced to these all this propaganda around Jesus. How do you have them exist in a society, and in New Zealand it's probably easier than some places because we're so secular, how do you have them not be infected with those mind viruses? Were you really careful with the way you introduced the ideas to them?
Yeah, so I think you hit on the head that we are lucky in New Zealand, very, very lucky,
extremely
lucky that we have a strong Christian influence, but there's nothing wrong with opting out. Yeah. Whereas in the States, you're a freak if you don't believe in God, right?
Yeah. Something like 40% of people in New Zealand, I think, say they do not subscribe to any religion.
Correct. Whereas my nephew in the States is kind of pariahed at school for saying no, he doesn't believe in God because, I mean, his dad's an astrophysicist. And
he must be a strong kid.
Yeah, he is. Very, very strong. Yeah. He's a very good kid. But we make a point with our son, who is quite an intelligent and onto it guy, the other part of the equation is that my wife and I were both raised as Catholics, right through our teenage years and everything.
Yep.
So we've both had the indoctrination, and I've had a backlash. She's had less of a backlash than me, but I've had a real backlash against it right through to, you know, hardcore atheism, which I've backed off on now. I believe there's a need for spirituality in the world and this sort of stuff.
Spirituality isn't the same as religion.
No, exactly. But
and I think that they're probably, I think you're probably right about there needing to be spirituality, because if you acknowledge some kind of spirituality in the environment.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk about, I mean, how else can you say that a tree is a special object if you can't talk about some kind of nature of a place?
Yep. Exactly.
You know, a park or environment being special. It's hard to express that. I mean, you can express that purely in aesthetic and functional terms, but if you can, I mean, the emotion of a place,
exactly,
I think, is spiritual.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean there are ghosts or pixies, and it doesn't mean that there is some magical being.
The warm, fuzzy feeling you get from a lovely forest glade or an amazing valley view, you know, there's something in that, right? Yeah. So that we're lucky in that he gets exposed to kids at school who go to church every Sunday. We drive past the church on Sunday. There's cars parked outside. He kind of asks about that. We've said, look, if you want to go to church on a Sunday with us, totally fine. We'll take you along. You can check it out. He's been to churches for funerals of close family who are religious. And so, you know, when we tell him that, we say, look.
I think, honestly.
People are religious because they choose to go that way. Yeah. And
not everyone has a free choice. It is a. I don't mean to keep using, for our religious listeners, I do not mean to minimize your faith when I call it a mind virus, but you know, the ideas around religion are what I consider a mind virus, a very powerful one.
Yeah.
If you believe in this thing, you get to live after you die. And if you don't believe in this thing, you'll be punished forever. Right? It's a very simple concept.
I forget about the kind of the horrible bits of it like that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of horrible bits. Read the Bible.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know them well. And that's why I basically backlashed is again, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but it was it's kind of a simple answer. It's the totally get out of jail free card for not having to think hard.
Mm.
And I'd prefer that. Yeah, I mean, you're raising kids is interesting, and it's sort of, am I the way I am today? Am I instilled with my sense of values today because I was raised as a Catholic, or was it just natural from my parents and that sort of stuff? So, so how do I instill those same values in my son about, you know, do unto others and, you know, that sort of traditional. Some of the most traditional Christian values without putting them in a Christian.
Do unto others is the golden rule.
Yeah.
And it is the fundamental rule that everyone really needs to live by if we want to have a civil society.
Yes.
And it is not a Christian value, it is a universal value. There are examples of it.
Yeah.
I've seen examples of it pulled from every religious text.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely every religious text.
Yeah.
They all express that in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the way you do it, is you basically acknowledge that it's a huge part of our society, but it's a choice. It's based on things that aren't completely true. And
it's based on myths and fairy tales.
And people, you know, I think there's celebrating the time of the year where it was the longest night or the shortest day, celebrating the equinox, celebrating when the first buds, you know, first flowers shoot up out of the ground.
Yeah,
these are real things, and these
absolutely
happen.
Real. Yes,
and so they're of interest to us as humans on this earth.
Yeah,
and I think that's what we're focused on and saying, and so we celebrate at that time, and because there's a huge Christian influence in the country, they celebrate.
Yeah, that's good. I really like your boy. I don't know your girl well enough. She's too young.
She's too little.
So who knows? She might be annoying.
She might
be obnoxious.
She's a freaking climber. I couldn't believe how different kids are.
Yeah.
She climbs everything.
Oh, I saw her. I saw a tweet from Alex saying that she'd climbed up onto the handrail on your balcony.
Yes.
Which, if I recall correctly, is a good 12 feet off the ground.
It is.
That
unbelievable.
Seems a bit scary.
So she climbed up on the
That's enough for a serious injury at best.
She climbed up on the on a chair that was against the inside of it, which was, you know, big chair.
She's a problem solver. Did she move the chair or was the chair there?
I think the chair might have been there, but it was a long way to get for her to get up. She climbed all the way up onto the railing. She climbs anything.
So that handrail will have been designed carefully with support spacing so that heads can't fit into it.
It's got no cross members, so you can't climb.
No cross members, and then just a chair where you go. And if the chair wasn't there, then she would have moved one.
Probably, yeah.
I bet.
Yeah. So we've got to keep an eye on it because she's a real climber. Oh, interesting.
Interesting, did you say? Drink?
Shit.
Something that came up a little bit while I was travelling, and this is the idea of not really being entirely present in the place you're in. Mm. This is with people looking, even if it was looking at things related to the area, looking at Google Maps and so on.
Yeah.
If you're looking at Google Maps, part of your brain is in Google Maps. Part of your brain is in that interface.
Yep.
And it is not present in the space you're actually in.
Yep.
So
is that you're saying it's a bad or a good
thing?
It
is a bad thing because... Yeah. Because when people were least out of the space they're in and least aware of their actual surroundings, that was when we actually made the worst decisions.
Oh,
literally the worst decisions.
Interesting.
Using conventional maps,
yeah.
My partner was the person who could find all the best trains to take. Oh. So almost everyone there had a smartphone. And literally everyone had an iPhone.
Really interesting.
And so there were apps that told you which train to take.
Yeah.
Her looking at the subway map always gave us a better result and got us where we were going faster than using an app.
Huh.
And following coordinates on a Google map to find one of the restaurants which we went to led us down a side street, led us down an alley.
Yeah.
Because I guess the GPS wasn't quite
sure
right.
The route
but I think, I mean, in retrospect, in hindsight, it's incredibly obvious that the flash restaurant is going to be on the road, not on the alley.
Yeah.
And so we walked, you know, with one of my friends buried in a map, this way, this way, this way, looking only into the device, not looking around, not really present, I think.
That's really interesting.
And I mean, we got cocktails up the Moree Tower. We went up to go to the museum and, you know, it wasn't really open, so we just went to the observation deck. And I've got a photo of five of my favourite people in the world sitting around a table looking at their phones. Behind them is this incredible view of Tokyo at night, and they're looking at their phones. Now, of course, they'd looked at the view. They had looked at the view. I'm not saying that they went in there looking at their phones, but it's just, it's a very strange thing to be absent, to be physically present, but have your thoughts completely elsewhere. So what this is a history of daydreaming, sometimes. Right?
Yeah, it is. And it's something that I wonder about at the moment a lot, because one of my favorite disconnects at the moment, you know, decompressed disconnect, because, you know, working in computers all day is just horrendous for your brain, is to walk and listen. So yeah. I'll put a podcast on and walk, and it will take me out of, I won't have to think about work and that sort of stuff. But I can walk for half an hour and not know where I've gone and think, oh shit, am I here already? Time to turn around and walk back.
I'm beginning to think that's
wrong.
That this distraction actually takes us away from our real lives.
Yeah.
I think that in some ways, using an electronic device where previously we used an analog one or thought, just thought by itself, not even any device, or, you know, conversation with the people around you. Mm. Instead of looking at a map, you know, talking to the person that's there, finding someone to have an actual physical, biological interaction with.
Exactly. And when we go out walking as a family, I don't listen to the podcast, and we have some really, really good conversation.
Right.
And it's, yeah.
The very best... and that's going to be hard for anyone to believe that I've ever exercised. But the very best exercise I've ever had was when a colleague of mine at an ISP I used to work at, we went to the same gym and we just met there every morning at 7 a.m. and we worked our fucking asses off and we competed with each other and we spoke to each other, and nothing else I've ever done has ever come close. Listening to an iPod, listening to music, absolutely doesn't come close to a real person actually being there.
Yeah.
You know, you can. I'm sure people will enjoy their audiobooks or their pumping up music at whatever rhythm they need to maintain the pace that they want for their ideal heart rate. Doesn't compare to a person.
No,
it doesn't compare to, you know, kind of the authentic experience of really being present. Mm. Yeah, of the actual sounds in the room. Yeah, I think that you're more aware of everything that's going on. But all that said, now I think that you spent last weekend at an app developer conference.
Yes. An iPhone Dev Camp.
Yep, can you tell me anything about that?
That's interesting. So it was an unconference, which is where you arrive and there's an empty schedule and you fill it out as you go. Mm. Really interesting in that I've done two or three of these now, and the other ones I've been to in all cases have kind of been a conference of peers, even though those peers may not be in the same line of business. They're the level of kind of... skill, you know, interaction.
I'm imagining that there were stars at this conference, because I know that some people I know are in that area. A lot of people I know develop apps, but I know some people who have really
absolutely
hit it.
And there are, you know, there are stars all the time. But the thing is that there were stars, and there were also people who have never downloaded the SDK.
So they're just purely kind of aspirational?
Yeah, and I guess when you see a thing saying, here's an iPhone developer conference, as a beginner you might go along and say, oh, cool, I'm going to learn how to develop apps. Mm. And it was really interesting, the unconference interaction in that sense broke a bit, because people would put up a session saying iPhone development for beginners, because that's what they wanted to learn about. And none of the experts would go to that session because it's of no interest to them.
Yeah.
Whereas if you imagined it was a conference of skilled iPhone developers, they'd put up a session about, if there was a session about iPhone development for beginners, it might be more about, okay, how do we teach beginners?
Yeah.
Or there'd be more sessions about in-depth memory management and handling, you know, bugs and this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting lesson about unconferences, and that you really need to get the right breadth.
I think New Zealand's brightest opportunities for the future are in embracing our creative thinking and problem solving culture that, you know, we credit ourselves for having. Maybe we don't really have it, but we credit ourselves for having this kind of problem solving, this number 8 wired culture. Just as much as any other culture. I think that we think that we have more.
Yeah, I agree. We think more, but pretty much the same as
well. Pretty much the same. Yeah. But we should embrace that belief in ourselves by becoming high tech and by exporting software, exporting bits rather than exporting milk and bits of wood. Yes. And the way to do that is by having these conferences and encouraging more developers to, you know, become real stars and really up their game. Yeah. So now, what were the good speakers?
As an unconference, you don't really have speakers, you just have people, you know, gathering, but
yeah, you do.
But you know, normal stars. Mr. Rando, Avon Rando, our friend.
Carl Avon.
Yeah, yes.
At Avon on Twitter.
Yeah, he does some serious iPhone apps. Rowan Simpson from Trade Me was there. Rowan Simpson, guy that used to own part of Trade Me, was there.
Is he rolling in it?
Probably. I don't know how much exactly. He's not Sam Morgan. He didn't have, you know, almost half of it. Rowan's always really interesting to me. I've met him a couple of times. Very interesting guy to talk to.
So is he was talking about a Trade Me app, or is he talking about other apps?
He now runs, as a member, owns, I don't know, Southgate Labs, who do bits and pieces of iPhone and Rails and all sorts of stuff. Mm. They help other companies. They do stuff themselves, bits and pieces. So he's there as a developer. Mm. He's also a former fatty. I didn't know this. Yeah. He's incredibly skinny now. He's like under 80 kilos. But
did he do it the hard way, or did he have the surgery? I'm not saying that the surgery isn't probably terrifying.
He did it the hard way.
Wow.
It started with, he was on Kim Hill's radio show a few months back, and I overheard, I didn't know this, but he was talking about it and she raised it. And it was in the Trade Me days, Sam Morgan bet him. Someone was doing the fucking the liver cleanse diet, that, you know, eat only lemons or whatever bullshit. For a week, or
such complete bullshit.
Yeah, real bullshit. Yeah. And he said stupidly, I could do that anyway. Yeah. And Sam Morgan basically bet him $100 he couldn't.
Yeah.
And that's
the liver cleanse diet.
Yes, and he did it.
Yeah.
Lost, you know, a bunch of weight doing that.
Yeah.
So you know, it's a bullshit.
That's fasting, essentially.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Of course you're gonna lose weight.
You eat only vegetable soup for 3 weeks or something like that. And
the cabbage soup one?
I don't know, something like that. They're all versions of madness.
They're all I have, and I'm sure that ultimately he didn't do that. I'm sure that ultimately he had a balanced diet and exercise.
Well, apparently he completed the liver cleanse diet.
Yeah, but that would have been 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And if he was a fatty and is now fit, the liver cleanse diet did not get him there.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we talked about this, and there's lots of different parts to it, absolutely. Although the interesting thing is that I was thinking about stomach staping and that sort of stuff. You have to massively change your diet.
Yeah, you can't eat anymore, right?
Incredibly diligent. But even before it, you have to prove that you can go on the calorie restriction. Otherwise, you can't have the thing.
Because you have a tiny stomach. Exactly. If you eat like you used to, you will do yourself a serious injury.
Yes.
And you'll make yourself sick.
Yeah.
Which seems like if that's the solution, then can't we come up with a pill where if you eat, you know, so if you eat the amount that would make you sick with a stomach stapling, then it will make you sick if you take this pill without a stomach stapling.
But this is the other thing I'd look at it, is that can't you just pretend? Or,
well, that's a diet, right? It's hard to maintain a diet.
Exactly. Or you know, go under a general and then wake up and they say, yep, you've had your stomach stapled and they haven't done a thing.
Yeah. And now if you eat, you will get seriously sick and you will fucking die. So Ben, why won't anyone do anything about how fat I am? It's funny that this has come up because I did, now while I was away, I exercised so much. I was on the go constantly. I felt like I was on the go constantly.
Yeah.
Walking and walking and walking, but also eating and eating and eating. And I completely blew my way through a threshold that I thought I would never, ever get over. For a very long time, I had I'm fat, but I always had a very stable weight.
Yeah.
And actually, since becoming a vegetarian, it's just been slowly creeping up. I know it's strange.
It's a
quantity
thing then, as opposed to.
I think it is a portion control thing, and I think it is about eating lots of carbohydrates.
Yeah, probably.
Because protein is very satisfying, and I do eat. You know, I eat fairly carefully, but not great portion control. And so I blew my way through this threshold that it's always seemed like fucking impossible. And so I think it's probably time to actually do something about it.
I've done the opposite.
Yeah.
In the last 6 weeks, got below a threshold I never thought I'd get below.
Oh, that's good.
Interesting.
What is that, 110?
No, it's 120.
You got below 120 and you thought you never got... 120 was my top threshold, and that's what I've just gone through. I never thought I'd ever be over 120 kgs.
Yeah, I've been over 120 for a year, 18 months now.
Far out.
And hovering around 123, 124, thinking that was my stable zone, and abusing it because it was my stable zone.
Yeah. I was stable at 114 before I became a vegetarian, and it didn't seem like it mattered what I did. I could eat anything I wanted and not get any fatter than that. And that was fat, but I could never, it never seemed possible to get fatter than that. Yeah. But I slowly increased to about 118, and my time in Japan, I just fucking blew it out.
Wow.
122 or something. Literally, I put on 4 kgs in about a week and a half.
Really interesting psychologically, seeing the downward trend, because I've been diligently graphing for the last 6 months trying to work out what I'm going to do.
Right.
Again, that's coming from what Rowan's been doing as well.
Yeah.
Reading the Hacker's Diet and just graphing to see how...
You know what works really well for me?
What?
Having breakfast. The other thing that works really well for me actually is shakes. I've done that in the past, and it's a very, very good way to lose some weight.
The thing with
it's easy. It's a really easy way to do it.
Yeah. And I'm doing it now, and it's basically what the way we're doing it is breakfast and lunch is shakes, and dinner is whatever the fuck. It doesn't really matter.
Well, that'll work really well. I bet you're probably losing at least a kilo a week.
Yep. And the good thing about that is like you can have don't go stupid, but I have yogurt for dessert or whatever, and don't really think about it.
Does this mean that at some point I have to stop joking about you having sandwiches all the time?
No, I'm fine with it.
I always thought you weighed less than me, but it turns out you were heavier than me.
It's crazy, eh? I think I've got I'm taller, or I don't know.
I'm 185 centimeters.
I'm 183.
Right.
It's weird.
That's not it. But I'm sure if people looked at the two of us, they'd say that I was much fatter. And now I am fatter, but previously I was thinner.
No, I think there's a body image situation there as well.
Is there?
Because I feel the same.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah. Listeners, if you've ever met us, which one of us would you say was the least attractive? rate us on a scale of, I was going to say 1 to 10, but imagine it's a scale of 1 to 10, and rate us between 1 and 3. Which one of us would you least like to have all up in your guts?
The sad thing about the whole thing is it's just willpower. And
it is just willpower.
And you do your head in thinking when you say that to yourself and you're fucking up.
Yeah.
And your brain is going, I know the rules. I know exactly how nutrition works. I know about calories in, calories out, metabolism, all that sort of shit. Know it inside out. I read it over and over again. And yet I still fuck it up.
You know the really terrifying thing? Yeah. I can remember when I was, actually, as I was referring to before, when I was working out with my mate, I had a nutritionist, because I think Les Mills, like, three lessons back then.
Yeah, they give you all sorts
of... three sessions. Yeah. And I got, like, the 10-session rip-off upgrade thing.
Yeah.
I was 104 kgs.
Yeah.
If I was 104 kgs now...
You'd be happy.
I'd be really happy. I think...
You thought you were huge back then?
No, I felt awesome. I felt awesome. That was actually before I got into the martial arts. When I was on the martial arts, I was actually about 108, 110.
Okay.
And I felt so fucking fit and so strong. I still looked fat, but I was ridiculously strong. I was the strongest person I've ever met.
We must be doppelganger or something, because I had a Kenpo for years.
Right, that's the sword one, right?
No, it's Kendo. Kenpo is basically karate.
Okay.
But it's interesting. It's linear Japanese karate with a lot of circular Chinese stuff mixed in.
Right. So the direct stuff.
So drills and Ichinisan, punching drills and kicking katas and that sort of stuff. Yeah. But then you'd do a flowery tiger form or a dragon. Right.
Yeah, we had some kata like that.
Yeah, which was kind of... I thought that was fun.
I always thought the kata was ridiculous.
You'd sweat like a dog.
Yeah. You'd rip off the skin from your knuckles. Yeah. You'd tear blisters off your feet. Yeah. You'd sweat like a motherfucker. You'd be covered in bruises and unbelievably happy.
Yes.
So happy. The end of some of my gradings, the end of some of my sparring classes. And I mean, as I referred to before, I was sometimes having 3 classes a day. Right. I was sparring a lot.
Yeah.
I could fight. Yeah. I could seriously fight. And when you spar that much with that many people, I mean, it's a very artificial kind of fighting. If you got into a fight with someone who was experienced with street fighting, they would just fucking kill you.
Yes.
But if you got in a fight with anyone else, you'd just take them to pieces. Mm. And all of that sparring literally made me almost, inside my head, unbearably aggressive.
Yeah. But I remember...
Did you get confident like you wouldn't believe.
I never, exactly. I never got through to black belt, but
no, I got brown tab as far as I did.
But I do remember the guys... I mean, I got friends who were fifth dan, black belt, and this sort of stuff. That's the reason I got into it. And they relayed a story to me of when they were driving to one of the Taupo conferences that they did. Mm. So a car full of 3 black belts.
Mm.
And something went down at a petrol station. There was some drunken guys having it on with them.
Mm.
And
were they wearing t-shirts, like karate t-shirts?
No, they were just in their normal casual clothes.
Right.
And basically, there was, I can't remember the exact details of the story, but it got to the point where they all stepped around the other side of the car towards these guys and stood there. And that's all they had to do.
Yeah.
Because it's that level of confidence you gain by saying, I know I can fuck you up.
Yeah.
That it's a different look, right? So those idiots who are street fighter or whatever, or you know, idiots who are drunk and want to have a fight.
Yeah.
They know that they're going to get fucked up.
Yeah. So yeah, someone stepped me out once. I'd been on acid all night, and he'd appeared to be like a greasy kind of a green alien to me, and he was gross, and he was hitting on my friend's baby sister's friend. She was like 14 or 15, and he was in his mid 20s, I think. And I thought he was gross, and I led him into. It was a friend's parents' holiday home. I led him into the bedroom that I was in because it had bunks in it. Yeah. I let him come and stay in there, and I was noisy and maybe I was making fun of him. And he stepped me out. He said, "Do you want to go outside?" And I said, "Yep." And so I hop up out of the bed, possibly wearing just undies. I open the door after you. He follows me through. I walk past him. I open the front door after you. He steps out. I stand outside. His face grey. All the blood drains from his face. And I just stand there. Now what? Completely collapsed. Didn't say another word to me. Yeah. I didn't hit him or anything.
No.
And he certainly didn't hit me. It would have gone very bad for him.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, the thing about people who stepped. I mean, there are some people who violence is actually a way of life for.
Yes.
And those are people that you can't do that with.
No.
But people who decide just to try it on. Yes. Maybe they were bullies at school, but they never actually. They never actually had to kind of justify their aggressive forwardness, and that the threat of violence. If they've always projected the threat of violence without ever actually having to deliver it. If someone comes along who has had even the slightest greater taste of it, they just collapse.
No, it's very
absolutely collapse.
Yeah, the stance can be.
Everything. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you for listening. This is going to be
into places we didn't think it would go.
Even, but I'm really glad that we've kept this bit up because this is much better than it was, isn't it?
Yes,
just the two of us. Actually, we can make it if we try. Just the two of us, you and I. You didn't join in, Ben. So anyway, it's Christmas, and when you are buying gifts for your, this is callback to something we started ages ago. I'm probably going to join you in the shake thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I've done that before. I want to get back down to about 110.
Yeah.
Yeah, which shouldn't take too long. But
it's fun.
It's very so, boring.
Again, it's boring, and but it's that's why boring. That's why I let Dinner go free range.
Yeah.
But it's funny because obviously, you know, I target something low like the 190 or whatever, and then you know, and Rowan said, "Oh yeah, I was at 90 for ages." And now I'm 75.
Yeah. If I was 75, I think I would be quite, I would think I'd be quite horribly underweight.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
I've done terrible things to my body. I think my body is actually designed to be a pretty good device.
Yeah.
I mean, when I look at the uncoordinatedness of a lot of people around me and kind of weakness and frailness, even fat, I'm kind of frail and capable.
Right.
Like even as a fat fuck, I can jump on a bike and, you know, go and, you know, crash it and break my arm. But I can also, you know, go and, you know, ride through the forest. And no one else there is fat.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone else there is,
same.
You know,
I've always had an incredibly low and easily recoverable heart rate.
Right.
I was actually on a nutrition study.
That probably means, I mean, that probably means that ultimately, in some respect, you're very fit.
Yeah, and they would take my heart rate, and it would be my resting heart rate is still around 50, 52. And they'd say,
right.
Did you used to do a lot of exercise? And I said, yeah, I used to.
Right. So, I don't think mine's ever been anything like that.
Yeah, I used to ride all the time.
I have no idea what my resting heart rate is.
Yeah.
Not something I'm likely to find out either. So anyway, as I've started to sort of start to say, for Christmas, think about what it really means to you, and think about what it means to your friends. And I know that sometimes it seems a little bit self-serving, but consider making a donation to the charity of your choice in your friend's name. In some way, and I've done this the last couple of years, and I have a twinge of that kind of holier-than-thou thing. I mean, the concern that people will perceive it that way, that kind of, oh, how smug. But,
no, I don't think so.
I think that people should think about that. Instead of buying more tat that no one needs, just consider a small donation can go a long way with the right charity.
The Oxfam give a goat and give a ox stuff are quite cool ways of doing that.
Yeah, I've done that the last couple of years.
Obviously, they're symbolic goats. Yep. They're not actually giving a goat to someone.
Oh, no, it can be a real goat. If you check on the form that you want what you buy to be that specific thing,
right.
And they will actually fence off your funds for that. But you definitely shouldn't. You should not check that box.
Yeah, and the $50 gives you a donkey, you know, symbolic donkey or whatever.
Yeah. The first year I did this, what I did was I actually I got the goat and the seeds and, you know, varying values, and I made little paintings on the back of them, and then I wrapped them around a bottle of wine. So it was kind of, you know, best of both worlds.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, something to enjoy, but no tat that will hang around cluttering people's houses.
We quite often have that rule in our family as well, as among adults. I give the kids presents, but adults something consumable.
Yeah, there's a lot of shallowness in the world, and this rampant consumerism, if you buy into that, you just kind of encourage that shallowness. Yes. There's a lot of stuff that people don't need.
$2 shops
almost everything.
Are the absolute...
they're the pits.
What are they?
They are the finish line of the race to the bottom.
Yes.
They are full of utter worthless garbage.
Yep. And the amount of effort, time, oil, energy, slave
blood
labor
and sweat
that's gone into them.
Yeah, because, I mean, there literally is
what
amounts to slave labor involved in the manufacture of a lot of these things. If you don't have a choice but to work in a factory, what are you?
And on that note...
Have
an... lovely week.
Enjoy your Christmas.
We'll be back before Christmas.
Oh, but I mean, by kids.
We'll raise it up.
Children should have toys.
Yes.
But maybe you could get toys made in New Zealand.
Yes.
Maybe you could get toys that, you know, the people that made them were paid a living wage. Maybe you could get toys which are made of wood, not, you know, toxic plastic. If you look at, you know, what we continue to discover about plastic, like the biphenyl A.
Mm.
Yeah, which was in lots of like the Nalgene bottles. So the fittest people, and like milk bottles as well for babies, like formula bottles. This stuff is toxic. It's horrible. And you want to give your children toys made out of the same stuff? No, you don't.
Nope.
But you know what's safe? Wood.
Yep. Genuine.
Made that way. Made safe just for you. Thank you so much for listening to the show.
Thank you for listening. Comments
at discourse.co.nz, yep. Or hit the website and go to the feedback page, you know, the talk back page, and use the form. We've had approximately zero responses through that form ever.
Yeah, give it a go. Tell us if it works.
Really, the only way we get feedback is actually Twitter.
Yeah.
So, you know, just do that. At DiscourseNZ on Twitter, at NZBen, at The Morgan. We're all wonderful people. If you've got a question that you'd like to ask, if you've got a complaint about something we've said, if you've got a comment about the bleeping, do you like the bleeping? Do you like swearing? Should we have free use of the word? Yeah. I don't know that I'm actually going to allow it.
So there are things we'll bleep, and I think we stay that way, but do you want us to unbleep everything else? Let us know.
Let us know.
Feedback. Tell us.
Feedback. Send us an MP3. And next week, we might be back on track, or we might not. How long, any guesses, Ben, on how long this episode's going to be? Because so far, we've got nearly 3 hours recorded.
Shit. I don't know. I hope it's under two.
Yeah, no promises. This is going to be the longest episode ever, even with a lot of cutting. Thank you so much for listening.
See you later.
You're listening to The Weekly Show with
God. All right, we're using that one.